We Can Confirmed is brought to you by Random House Audio. Experience books like you've never heard them before. Press play.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
We Can confirm.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to We Can Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee, and I have a excellent power trio here of Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Hey, two N's, one T, of course. That's a spelling of my last name, not just a thing I say.
Not just a thing you
People
say.
People still get it wrong quite
and
a lot.
Down there at the end of the table is Plan Brewers.
Plan B.
Plan Brewers.
Hopefully the Plan Brewers will win tonight. So
by the time you're listening to this, you'll already know whether Billy was celebrating last night.
If I was drunk for happiness or if I was just crying in my beer.
What do you think, the Packers are going to go undefeated this season or what?
I don't talk about those things. After the season, I can say things like that. But
crushing people.
God, they are.
However, your fantasy team was let down by none other than their fantastic, usually reliable tight end, Mr. Jermichael Finley.
It's true.
Who did all of like 3 points in the weekend confirmed ESPN league for you.
What's up with that?
Your team was really snake bit, which we will get to in the NFL
Flacco.
Tailgate today.
Flacco.
That's why you stack your team with Packers. I have three.
Pack my team with
Greg
stackers?
Greg Jennings and Aaron Rodgers and Jermichael Finley.
He's a Packer stacker.
It works.
I've always known that about him. He's a Packer stacker, that Berghammer. We got an awesome show I'm pretty excited about. Among other things, we have a 17-year-old listener, goes by Thunderhead, who is a drum and bass producer who has furnished us with an awesome D&B track for today's music break. Now, you know, I know your electronica haters are already like, "It's not a terrible Garnet track. Oh, I'm going to go piece up on him." Listen to this. Like, 17-year-old kid producing his own music. It's fucking awesome.
Having said that,
it's awesome.
If you're 17 and you're into drum and bass, there might be something wrong with you. Just saying.
No.
Okay.
Something awesome about him.
All right. No, I can't wait to hear it myself.
All right. So we've got all that. And of course, we're going to talk about some games. There's like all kinds of stuff going on. Not the least of which is Wednesday's announcement from Microsoft that they're bringing television to the Xbox 360.
Sort of.
Except then you look closer and it's not really. What a broken promise to me, really, honestly.
Why?
Okay, because
why do you need this at all?
So let's tell. Here's what you got, folks. Last year, Microsoft initiated a program with AT&T UVerse where you could use your Xbox 360 as a satellite box in the UVerse system to bring their television system to your TV remotely. You still had to have the UVerse box in the house someplace.
Right.
Because it has like some, you know, processing that it has to do, and then it would shoot it over to the 360.
Which leads me to say, why do you need this?
You might use it because you like to interface with the Kinect system and you have a 360 hooked up to a second television or, you know, like that.
So you like to wave in the air.
Like you just don't care.
Instead of using a remote.
So you can do Xbox, Bing, Friends, and it'll find
Bing,
Friends.
Bing, bong, bing.
It'll find Friends. Because that's...
I was hoping there was a show that they would come out with called Bong Bing, so you could go, Xbox, now, Bing, Bong, Bing.
Now, when we wind up talking about the iPhone and you start preaching to me about how awesome Siri is going to be, I'm going to remember this moment.
I don't know.
Because you could turn and go, oh, dude, Siri is so awesome.
No, no. I think voice control is super cool. I mean, I want Star Trek just like any other
word. All right,
nerd.
So
but I'm,
there's
but,
a reason for you to use your 360 with your television.
All right. I don't know.
No?
I don't think we're there yet, is what I'm saying. And I don't think...
But you... No, we are. You can do that with Kinect.
Yeah, you can. But is it practical? Is it... It's gee whiz a little bit, but it's not as practical as lifting my phone and asking it directions to someplace because I'm in my car.
Skynet, where's the nearest McDonald's?
I really want you to explain the difference because how
I think
that?
I just did. I'm
it's
saying
not
it doesn't...
practical to sit on your couch and go Xbox, Bing, Friends, and have it look up Friends and go play.
I don't. That's not how you get Friends, Garnet. I know it's you've tried, but it's that's not how you get Friends.
Xbox, Bing, Monday Night Football.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I mean, okay. Yeah, that's cool, I guess. I'm just saying...
It's the same thing as pulling up the guide.
It's not like saying... I remember when the first Xbox, there was rumors abound because it had a hard drive in it that you were going to be able to use it as a DVR.
As TiVo.
And that's because DVRs weren't prevalent.
Well, let me
you had
get
to
my
buy
broken...
a TiVo. And now everybody has a DVR, right? It just comes with your... your provider.
It's just magic. They just show up on your doorstep.
Pretty much every provider offers that, don't they?
All right, so let me get to my broken promise by like finishing like what they actually announced. So then what they announced on Wednesday was that they're doing a similar thing with Verizon's Fios service, where you'll be able to use your Xbox 360 as a Fios gateway. They did not in the announcement clarify whether you would still have to have a Fios box in your like house or apartment or whatever. Now, I've seen the Fios installation before. I've never lived any place that had it, but I've seen the installation, and they have to put this like networking interface device in a closet or something already. So maybe it doesn't need an extra box in the house. Maybe you could use the 360 as your primary one. However, there's also a little other thing. You know, one of the things I thought was not so great about that was that as part of that announcement, Verizon didn't say you get everything. They said you'll get a selection of popular live TV channels through the Xbox 360. So that leads me to believe that you'd still want the main Fios box. And then they also did a deal with Comcast. But the deal with Comcast is a little different also. If you have Comcast Xfinity, you'll be able to get on-demand video through your Xbox 360.
Now that's cool. I think that's cool. I think that's what...
cooler?
Yes.
Okay.
On-demand video of certain... I mean, that's not something that I'll just have anyway with my cable provider. Some cable providers offer on-demand programming, but...
Well, I think it's part of the Xfinity package is that...
You just get what Xfinity already offers?
Well, I think...
Yeah, that's...
See, I think that's the reality, I think, of all these Xbox 360 developments.
But wasn't it... Is there something about it being apps of channels? Because that's what people were talking about... It was rumored that the Apple TV was going to evolve into, was just sort
so
of
they've also done some
television channel as app.
They also announced some app partners. Among them were outlets like Bravo, TMZ, Sci-Fi, and YouTube. And now it opens the door, and they haven't answered this question, at least as of the time we're recording this Wednesday afternoon. They hadn't answered the question of, is this going to be like ESPN3, where it's tied to your ISP of whether or not you'll be able to access those
things? As a Roadrunner user, and I'm still waiting for my frickin' ESPN. Thanks, jerks.
And it's almost sure to be that
way. I care about this shit. Like, yeah. I've been waiting. It's been over a year. Like, they, you know, and apparently they've been working, you know, it's, you know, the interface between the two, you know, the providers and everything like that. But, you know.
Well, you heard the last thing
about
Time Warner.
And I've got DirecTV and Time Warner. So, like, I think I'm pretty much shit out of luck. I mean, I was talking to Patrick Klepek about this. I'm like, how is this going to work? And he's like, no, basically what this has created is more questions because nobody really knows if they're in the clear unless you're probably doing all right if you're doing Fios and AT&T.
Yeah, and Fios penetration is really not that great. I mean, although it's an awesome service, I know a lot of people would love to have it because of the high bandwidth and low latency and great delivery. It's just not available many places.
I don't think this is what consumers want. I think what consumers, the sort of end game that consumers are hoping for is this a la carte model of being able to buy exactly what I want when I want it. The sort of appification of a channel so you can go, I want only this. I don't have to pay my service or my cable provider for this giant block of channels and get 30 channels I don't care about.
Well, you want to cut the cable. I mean, that's honestly the end of the day. You want to cut the cable.
Right. And you want to be able to get just what you want and pay for just what you want and not have to pay a big block price for a bunch of stuff you don't
care
about.
So there's the broken promise to me is that 4 years ago at CES was when Microsoft first started showing the holy grail of IPTV through the 360. Mm-hmm. You take the 360, you'd hook it up to a broadband connection, and you would get internet-delivered television channels. The problem is, like, that's never going to happen in the current structure because what bandwidth provider is going to let you get television over their stream where they're footing the bill basically for all of that gigs and gigs of data that's flowing through without getting a subscription? Like, so in your world,
if you're in Asia, you're fine.
Well,
you know, fiber is like so prevalent over there, but
eventually someone wants to get
paid. Government made certain that was the case.
Yes.
I mean, if you're holding the pipeline through which all of this data is going for video and you're not getting a cent out of it and you're providing the switching and the support and the network, I think you have at least some leg to stand on as far as, hey, there needs to be some sort of revenue sharing going on there.
Yeah. I mean, if you think right now you're going to be able to, you know, get rid of your cable provider or satellite or DirecTV or whatever and just watch live television on your 360, I don't think
it's not going to happen.
I don't see it, you know, especially since Sony's also fighting for all the sports stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they've got football locked up. They've got MLB over there.
For at least a year.
That's what I get from this announcement is it's a solution searching for a problem. you know, like, what? Who is this for? What is this?
Well, it works for Fios because Fios is both a Fios is an internet delivered television solution in the first place, really, because they're bringing you to the television stream into your house in what we think of as a data transmission format, not in a television transmission format. They're not running like a, you know, they're not running like coax cable, like a cable company would,
right?
Because it's like, actually cable internet is the other way around. Cable internet is them shooting data through the old, you know, through the coax cable that they had designed to be more of like a video transmission system.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, so, you're already paying for Xbox Live. So as long as they don't jack up the prices again, it's like, who cares? Fine, you get more, you know, and that was what I was, you know,
but
my
you don't get this without paying for a cable provider.
Right.
You don't get this without paying also for UVerse or Fios.
Nope.
That still, I don't think they've answered that question yet.
You won't get, well,
not the Fios stuff. Yeah, obviously.
And you won't get the TV stations like you do on Fios without being a Fios subscriber, which means you're just using it as a box.
Or
you won't
the Comcast
get the, you won't get the Comcast on demand. Then the question becomes those apps, right? Like, how do those apps work? And we already know how the ESPN app works.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you. Right now it tells me it doesn't work.
Don't be silly, man. You know how it works. The way the ESPN app works is that it looks at your IP address.
Right.
And if your internet provider already has a relationship with ESPN to deliver ESPN3 via the internet, then it says, oh, okay, you're okay to do that. Now, the hang up with Time Warner is that they wanted to have a login step in between there. And supposedly, they're working on that. You know, there was an announcement from Microsoft. It was over the summer, remember?
It was last year's PAX. It was when we were at PAX last year.
Was it?
Yeah.
That they said, hey.
I was like, sweet. I can, you know.
They're working on an intermediary step. And why they haven't gotten that done, I mean, in a world of automatic logins, it's absurd that that hasn't gotten done. I mean, it's just silly. That shouldn't really be such a hard thing to figure out. Mm-hmm. They should have that solved. So who knows what the deal is? Because they have an agreement to give, because you can get ESPN3 on your computer.
Yes.
Which means they have the agreement. They're just not letting you get it through to your Xbox because they want to make sure that people aren't borrowing your login or something. I don't know.
I mean, you know, I saw a lot of, you know, people are the shitstorm on Twitter and things today. And, you know, I think if you get more stuff, it's great. You know, like,
yeah, I guess. Know, if you get, but you're still paying for that stuff. It's not like you're getting it in a different place that you already have it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So you know what, to me, the funniest part of this all is I think that Microsoft has Apple to thank for this announcement.
Because it's basically a reaction to what Apple TV is, or what?
Because it's basically just another version of what you get with iPad apps and Android. I mean, all this is it allows the 360 to serve as a companion app to other services you're already subscribed to. It's not a first tier provider conduit. It never has been. Right. It's not like you can, again, like what we talked about, it's not like you can hook your 360 up and get these videos.
Right.
You can hook it up, and then if you have an account with something else, you can access through that. So, like,
it's an appliance.
Right.
Your 360 now is an appliance.
Like, we've got an HBO Go app for the iPad. We've got a Time Warner app for the iPad, and you can get, you know, certain, you know, you get like the Xfinity app for the iPad.
Are you already doing this? Now you can also get it on that. Yeah, it's like Netflix.
Nothing special.
Exactly.
It's like Netflix.
I mean, and what you, to answer your question, you're like, why are they doing this? You know, TMZ and Sci-Fi, you know, you don't have to pay for the, I mean, they're kind of part of your basic, I'm assuming, basic cable channels. But
yeah, or extended cable or whatever.
Why are they doing it? Because they can put ads on it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. See, I think that what's going to happen is with those, now, with internet stuff, you know, like iHeartRadio, with YouTube, Dailymotion, those things are already delivered over the net. I don't think they'll run into this problem. But with channels that are right now distributed through cable, I would imagine that those carriage contracts include some protections that will wind up with it being a check of, do you have a valid subscription with somebody where you would get to see this content?
I think that's likely.
And then, do you have a valid...
they're not going to give it to you for nothing.
And again... back to that thing about who's going to handle paying for all the bandwidth. Again, like, there's a lot of internet providers that are going to look at this and say, look, you know what? HD video takes a lot of bandwidth, and I don't want to sit here and foot the bill for carrying all this HD bandwidth if I don't get anything out of it.
Well, the Bravos and the TMZs, I think that's more just on-demand sort of stuff. You know, I think it's just, you can get that, you know, you can get those television shows most of the time out of Netflix anyway. So
still going to be a lot of bandwidth.
Branding, you know, for those networks, it's branding.
But isn't it just, it's already coming to your house through their pipe because you're paying for AT&T UVerse or Fios, right? So you're already...
if you have those, I don't think it'll be an issue.
Oh, you're saying
I'm saying if you have somebody else's
like
internet...
me.
If you have another internet provider,
yeah.
Okay. Then, you know, look, there's a lot of bandwidth flying around, and it's increasingly becoming an issue. So Zav's off in Toronto this week, and he's been
Thanksgiving.
Working.
Happy Thanksgiving, Canadians.
That's early.
Yeah. They were proactive with the pilgrims.
Mm. Proactive.
He gets turkey twice. He gets to come back.
Yeah.
Double dipping Canadian. They were good.
That's never a bad thing.
Pilgrim promoters. So he's up there working, and he hasn't really been doing anything special. And in 2 days, he hit his parents' 2 gig internet cap because they have capped service.
Yeah. Well, don't. And by the way, we have some Australian.
Australia says hi.
We have some Australian listeners, and they are probably like screaming right now. Like,
yeah.
Don't pity Canadians. They have a Shangri-La compared to what we have.
So, I mean, there's still a lot of things to work out here. I think it's cool what you can do with the 360. I think it's cool to, you know, be able to use it as a portal to play around with and have it integrated. I mean, I like it's kind of neat to be able to just turn on your 360 and, like, play a game and then turn on music or then turn on video and, like, have it be like the media center box. I get that. That's cool.
I know, you know, Sterling McGarvey, a big soccer guy, he uses ESPN3 all the time, that ESPN app on Xbox. And I think that's great. I think that, you know, and actually, if you looked at that list, there's all those international channels. Yep. I would love to get that kind of programming. Right. I know that's so far-fetched and crazy talk, but like...
Now you're into the same bottleneck as all these legacy providers and legacy agreements that wind up bottlenecking. Like, obviously, the tech is there.
You're a soccer guy too. I mean, or, you know, even like the indie stuff, like, you know, getting Sky TV or, you know, all that sort of shit. That'd be really
cool. I'd kill to get some of the racing content that comes out of Europe.
Like, that's what I was saying.
Like DTM League. If I could watch DTM, I'd be in hog heaven. That'd be freaking awesome.
I just want the Oach. Can we get ESPN 8? The Oach.
ESPN 8.
Ping pong all the time.
All right, so we'll see what happens out of that. Oh, and by the way, a little quick side note that I don't know if anybody else noticed. Did you see that Zune dropped to $10 for the monthly pass?
Huh.
And that's actually, like, if you work it out, that's a really good deal because you get to keep 10 songs per month anyway. So basically, if you would buy 10 songs anyway, you can have your Zune and eat it too or something. I don't know.
Whichever.
It does have a chocolatey look to it.
Whichever platform gets Spotify is going to win. Just saying, on the music front.
I don't actually use Spotify anymore.
It's awesome.
It's awesome.
It's not awesome for discovery. It's great for knowing your music.
How is it not? I mean,
it's the same thing, dude. It's showing you, it's making your custom.
They just added radio to the web interface for America, and it's fine, but I don't find it nearly as useful to me as like Pandora for finding stuff that I like, for finding new stuff. Now, for listening to things that I know, like, oh, I want to listen to this, I know what I want to listen to, or I want to listen to a friend's playlist, sure, Spotify is great for that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because you're only listening to the 17-year-old dub and bass channel constantly.
Wow.
No, I'm totally trolling a listener. He's awesome for sending us music. I appreciate
you're
that.
You're so mean, Kanata.
I'm not. I'm just having fun.
You're
I kid.
So mean.
I kid the 17-year-olds.
All right.
You hate Canada. He's Canadian too.
What? No. Now I love him.
Reversal of fortunes. All right. So I guess the other big thing that happened this week was Rage came out. And you guys played it. I went to the party.
Yeah, you did. I did not. And I regret every second of not.
It why? Was everyone fantastic. Says it was cool.
I saw your pictures.
The Black Keys were pretty impressive.
That's why. Because I saw your tweeted pictures and I went, I should have gone to there.
It was good. Chinese food is great. Chinatown in LA is really cool.
Yeah, Billy and I went to this crazy restaurant in Chinatown. It was like, it was very Chinatown-ish. We have a Chinatown here. Do you know that?
Yeah.
But it's not really... It's not really like Chinatown in San Francisco. It's more
that's because, yeah.
But Chinatown in San Francisco is pretty touristy.
Yeah, I guess so.
This one's way touristy.
The one here?
Yeah.
Well, the part where the party was but really the part where cool. We went to dinner wasn't at all. It was just like random street with a Chinese restaurant. I was like, oh, okay, that was pretty good.
Well, I played Rage, and I finished Rage, single player. And I did it in about 14 hours. Although I did almost none of the racing stuff, I kind of just kept doing missions and didn't really do. So there's tons of stuff I did not do. But I did all of the missions, and it came out to about 14 hours. So it's a hefty game. Comes on 3 discs for the 360. I played it on 360.
Did you like the 14 hours? That's the real question.
I'm very, very high on this game. I like it a lot. But it's my kind of game. It's... I've started describing it as Grand Theft Auto if where they started was a shooter. Instead of Grand Theft Auto where it's sort of they tacked on shooting and it took them a lot of iterating to get it right. This is like starting with great shooting and then building a Grand Theft Auto type world.
I can see that. I can see that. I've only put an hour and a half in so far, but that's the game I'm going to finish this week. So It's I can see that.
I like it a lot.
Because Grand Theft Auto is very quest-based. You know, so it's, you know, sort of fetch questy.
Yeah, and it tends to be like Grand Theft Auto, especially the earlier Grand Theft Autos, is when you get into a quest, you're sort of, you sort of cordoned off a little patch of the world for yourself, and you're inside that quest. And until you're done with it, you're doing that, you know? And so it's basically, or a little bit like Zelda, you know, in that you have a hub world that's a big
open. Well, that just sparked a forum post.
Not, I mean, it's not like Zelda in anything other than the sort of relationship of hub world to dungeon. You know, you go in the hub world, you get a quest, then you go in the dungeon, and it's basically a single player shooter level.
Right.
And a fully fledged shooter level that you're inside, and it's great. It's a great shooter. The weapons are awesome. There's what I didn't realize going in was just how much RPG stuff there was. I feel like there's this scale between Borderlands and Fallout 3, where Borderlands is on the shooter side. You know, it's really a shooter with some light RPG elements, and then Fallout 3 is really an RPG with some light shooter elements. And in the middle of that is Rage.
Whoa. Your Rage is more RPG than Borderlands?
Yes.
Really? No.
How?
Dude, there's no leveling, okay? There's no leveling. So okay. So that may
there's
be... There's crafting, which is a big deal in this game and awesome.
You're such a World of Warcraft guy still.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, but there's no... I mean, do you level up your equipment?
Well, you get better ammo for that equipment. Yeah.
Okay. So skill tree?
There's not a skill tree. There's not... But neither, there is
a skill tree in Borderlands.
But here's the thing. Borderlands is this empty world that's just full of guns and money. Well, and the money is there to get guns, and the guns is there to shoot things, right? So it's a shooter, and you have classes, and you have skills, but
it's an action RPG. I think Borderlands is a classic loot-grinding action RPG in a first-person shooter skin.
Okay, if the way you define RPG is...
Action RPG. Different sorts of RPGs for different folks.
All right, but I'm saying to define our scale here, if we're going to go with my metaphor, if the way you define role-playing is by character advancement, then yes, Borderlands is more... Trump's Rage.
Okay.
But I think for world-building and the way the world is constructed... It feels much more like an adventure game or a role-playing game. Like you said, there's crafting. There's lots of stuff to find and use. And you know, you search out little areas and you find things, and they're useful because of the crafting system. There's an entirely huge, deep car side to the game where you're participating in races and you're earning currency. There's two kinds of currency. There's money, and then there's like race tokens. And the race tokens are used only to upgrade your car.
The quest system is that dense?
Well,
that's what jumps out to me, because now I'm thinking about Borderlands, because, you know, I'm playing Borderlands co-op again, and the quest system in that is, I mean, it's good. There's lots of storylines going on. You're interacting with NPCs, and they're sending you over here to go take care of this problem, sending you over here to go take care of this problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do in Rage, too. I mean, okay. I think
it's
the
fetch quests.
Yeah.
Go get some parts for your car. Go get me bandages. Go do this. Come back.
Yeah. I mean, but it's usually go to this place and do the thing, and you go to that place, and it's a very long... detailed single player shooter level. So you're going in, go to the Jackal's hideout.
Yeah, go to
the Jackal's hideout, and the Jackal's hideout is basically a Zelda dungeon kind of deal. I mean, it's not, there's no puzzles. Yeah, there's no puzzles, and there's no, I don't mean it Zelda that way, in the sense that you go to that place and you're in that place until you're at the end of that place.
In a Darksiders sort of way.
And I really love.
Right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, same thing, really, right?
Yeah.
Those games,
and you get
same
on a zip line and get out.
That's what I love. I love the level design in that, because it doesn't make me fight my way out. There's always a shortcut when you're done with the thing,
and there's an exit,
and you get out.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that. The downside is that there aren't very many of those places, and they reuse them. Usually, there's a main quest where you need to go to this place and do this thing. And the level is awesome, and the levels are very different from one another. There's like levels where you're down inside something.
There's a lava world and an ice world and a water world.
You're down inside something, and it's very corridory. And then there's others where you're like, it's levels and it's vertical, and you're going up things. So there's a lot of really cool level design there. But there's usually a main quest where you have to go do something in some place. And then there's a side quest where it's like, hey, return to that place and do something different. And the cool thing is that when you return there, all the stuff you did to it to change it is still changed, which I respect. I like that. If you killed a big boss and he died, he's still, his corpse is still there. If you like blew up a bunch of stuff because that was what the quest required you to do, it's all blown up still when you return. I like that. But you are reusing these locations frequently, and that can feel like the, it can feel a little tired by the end of the game.
That was one of Jeff's complaints in his review, was that, you know, he really, he also said the same thing. Like, he loved the shooting parts, he loved all of the missions, but that by the end of the game, he found that it had gotten a little repetitive, that he actually thought some of the best, highest highs of it were way before he got to the finale.
I agree. It has one of the worst endings of a game I can remember. It's as if they went, oh, we got to pull some of this game out. We got to finish this game. Let's just truncate the end. Because it doesn't make any sense, really.
You know, it didn't take them that long to make this game, right? It's a couple of years.
They just threw it together. It's a slap job.
If it just feels very abrupt, and the ending cinematic is really short and doesn't really give you any closure, and it's not even a cliffhanger. It's just like, this happened, and it's like, okay, well, but I don't really know why that's important.
Did they leave it for like a sequel or something?
No, that's why I said it's not a cliffhanger. It's just.
But I mean, not even a lead for a sequel.
It's very abrupt.
Well, that's weird.
Maybe I missed something.
How do you feel about the driving? Because that's one of the major aspects of this game.
I think if you've only played an hour, you probably started with the ATV.
Yeah.
And the ATV is by far the worst vehicle. It shouldn't even be in the game. It's cool because it's an ATV.
Right.
But it's useless. It doesn't have any
weapons.
I just
got the buggy, but I did not take it out.
Yeah. When you move up to the Corporino or whatever it's called, and the Monarch, I really like it. I like the fact that, like GTA, there's jumps areas where you can figure out a way to make that jump, and it rewards you with something. There's another reason it reminds me of GTA is there's tons of mini games, tons of them.
Yeah. Jeff definitely liked that.
There is there's like a rhythm kind of DDR or Guitar Hero type. It's like a guitar game, really. Mini game. Or it's more like Simon. It's like memorizing what the guy did and trying to repeat it. There's my favorite thing, as I said last week, is there's a full CCG in the game, which I love. There is the hand stabby thing that you also do in Red Dead.
Mumblepeg, whatever they call it.
Yeah,
Five finger something.
Five finger fillet.
Yeah. There's that in the game, which is devilishly difficult and ramps up hard. You know, there's tons of stuff like that.
It's because you're not Bishop. If you were Bishop, it would be easy.
Yeah, right. It's true.
But the reason why I brought up the driving, okay, maybe the ATV does suck, but like I'm driving around this dirty wasteland that there's dust and shit flying everywhere, and I'm not power sliding. Like,
yeah,
vehicles are stuck to the ground. Like, and that does not make any sense to me. I mean, if doesn't seem like...
I completely agree with that. The braking system feels very strange.
I was like, where's the button to like power... Not that I need to power slide, but, you know, coming from my Mario Kart roots, but like even driving on dusty shit, you would slide around in theory, you know, and
I completely agree with that. And I think that's probably why...
Not in the future, you wouldn't.
That's probably why I didn't do much of the racing stuff. It just didn't feel super fun. But I like that it's there, and you can change the suspension.
So none of the later,
later
vehicles slide around at all? You're just basically stuck and kind
of... Yeah. In fact, they get more precise with their turns.
That's the way the game... I saw the game debuted at QuakeCon like 6 years ago or whenever they debuted that game, and that's the way the vehicles looked then. And yeah. I was like, hey, and I was talking to Tim Willits about, like, you know, slide around at all because it's dusty, you know, and not seeing that changed. I mean, not that that's as big of a deal, but...
No, I agree with you. It feels weird.
You know, Rage is about shooting and driving, right?
Yeah.
And questing.
And you shoot while you drive. I mean, one of the things that's strange is that toward the end of the game, there's one mission where for a brief period of time, the mission itself is in the car. So you're almost always using the car to get you to the start of a mission, and then it's a FPS level. And then for one brief period of time, the mission is the car. And I was like, why isn't there more of this? This is awesome. I should be driving and shooting guys on my way through the mission, and there should be car levels where I'm, you know, doing none of that. I mean, the open world has cars driving around it all the time, and you're rewarded for blowing them up, which is really cool. I love how there's multiple avenues for earning currency all the time. So if you hate one aspect of it or just prefer not to do that, you have another way to earn that same currency.
Something that strikes me is maybe it's just a simply a scope thing. I mean, they went and built a really, really big game. And yeah, it's so big that we can also see other avenues they could have explored, but they really went down a lot of paths, did a lot of things like, you know, the shooting, the side games, tons of side games, the whole collectible card game.
Yeah.
And all the mission structure.
Awesome. Every game should have that, by the way.
And racing, and which we haven't even talked about.
Yes, it's awesome. It makes collecting stuff in the game so rewarding because you're like, I found an awesome, powerful card. It's so great.
And of course, we haven't even talked about multiplayer, so stick around. When we come back on the other side of this break, we will hit multiplayer. We will also hit the PC debate that came up because the launch of an id title didn't go well on PC, which is, you know, as long as they've had, I think there are a lot of folks who are a little bit upset about that. So we'll get all of that and more when we come back on the other side of this break. This week's episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Random House Audio. Here's a sample of Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, read by Will Wheaton.
Acererac made a final, desperate move to avoid my charge and dropped a micrometer too low. His final mount died in a tiny, pixelated explosion. Player 2, game over, appeared on the screen, and the Lich let out a long, blood-curdling howl of rage. He smashed an angry fist into the side of the joust cabinet, shattering it into a million tiny pixels that scattered and bounced across the floor.
Visit www.randomhouseaudio.com to download something new. Hey, we finally got Will Wheaton on the show, even if we had to like just co-opt him reading Player One. Pretty awesome book. You know, that's the book that John Davison was super hyped for. Billy, you took it to Tokyo and didn't even...
Nope. I ended up sleeping on the flight.
So there you go.
That's my next audiobook. You know, I'm a huge audiobook guy.
Are you?
I love it. It's all I do when I run, I listen to audiobooks. Yeah.
So there you go.
I can't listen to music when I run.
Plug for our sponsor, randomhouseaudio.com. Thanks for sponsoring Weekend Confirmed. All right. Wrapping up the rage subject, multiplayer has two pieces. One of them is buggy racing. Mm-hmm. And like Jeff was like, I'm sorry Jeff isn't here. He's getting ready for IndieCade, which is a big thing that's happening this weekend. If you're in the Los Angeles area, you should go over to
Culver City. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun.
It's really cool.
It's really cool. There's some great games to check out there. And the one thing that's really cool is you get great access to the designers because they're all indies. And, you know, everyone wants to talk about this stuff. Skulls the Shogun will be there.
Hell yeah.
You should definitely check that out. Anyway, multiplayer is buggies.
Yeah.
In an id game.
Yeah, but you're shooting each other. Kind of. I mean, you are.
I think it's funny because the buggy thing, because of the speed and because of the way, like you're, so while you were talking about them not power sliding, all I could think about was multiplayer, because multiplayer to me feels like Quake 3 multiplayer. It just so happens that you're in a car because it's that speed, that sort of power up system, that sort of learn the map and run routes sort of deal. And I don't know. Obviously, I haven't played it since the last time I had like a preview event, but that was final for multiplayer, and it just didn't turn me on very much. I was like, okay, meh.
Yeah, I didn't really play much of it at all. I was concentrating on the single player, but I think I may have come off more negative on the game than I really, really like it.
Sounded to me like you liked it.
Yeah, there's tons. I mean, by the time I get to the end and I'm summoning like sentry bots and throwing up turrets that I built because I got all these, you know, components that I've found through the world, and I have the BFG by the end.
Of course, you gotta earn. I mean,
I'm a rolling house of death. It's so much fun.
Presentation wise, it's absolutely gorgeous, and the audio work that they did on it, like the guns. I've only, you know, messed around with two guns: the pistol and the shotgun. But man, like there's just, you know, and I've been playing games on the same audio system for a while now. It just thunderous. Like the guns have some really good audio heft. It's great.
Yeah, and Jeff said it was like the reverb on them is just like is thunderous. It's a good word for it.
Yeah,
it's a good word for it.
Might be my favorite character designs in a futuristic game in a long time. Every single character you meet is very unique, very different, animates in a really awesome, authentic, cool way. Cool. Like they don't just stand there and they're not just a talking head. They gesticulate and they have idiosyncrasies that are unique to them, which is what
the definition of idiosyncrasy is. So if you like the characters, are you going to play the co-op? The Legends of the Wasteland, because I kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
I think that's so the way they've done multiplayer co-op or two-player co-op is that it's all side stories.
Right.
And I think this is cool because obviously they built out a big world. They have a lot of story material to cover, and it tells all of these side stories that you probably saw parts of going through the single-player game, and now it tells like, oh, well, this is what happened with that sheriff, or this is what happened with that bandit and outlaw. So did you play any of them yet?
No, none of all those. Right. Yeah, none of the.
So there's your assignment, Mr. Kanata.
Play some Legends of the Wasteland.
I'm curious. I mean, did you think the voice, because John Goodman plays one of the characters?
He sticks out. It sounds like John Goodman.
It sounds like John Goodman. And you have that picture of that large man there talking, and he's like a skinny guy. And I'm like, it just feels weird. But the voice acting's great. I mean,
yeah. It's a top notch all the way around. It's great.
So there are some technical limitations, a couple of them. One of them, definitely I know this about on 360. We haven't gone and looked at it on PS3. But one of the things that Jeff pointed out was that while it looks great at range and it runs really fast at 60 frames and all that kind of stuff on 360, is when you get up close that the textures really wash out and look muddy.
Yeah, and it has that that first gen of the Unreal 3 engine problem where they pop in.
Because they're streaming all the textures in and out all the time. Yeah. I mean, that's tough to manage.
Yeah, and it recommends that you install the game, but I didn't really find much difference between
it's so weird because Jeff said
install.
It was like a big deal. He was like, really? he recommended it. He's like, as part of the review, he's like, yeah, it's 21 gigs to install.
Well, I installed the first disc and didn't install the second disc, and I didn't really notice much difference between the first and second, but maybe he has a sharper eye than I do. I don't know.
I think it would just be a matter of like streaming, and I don't know how they're utilizing it. So it's really up to how they utilized it. However, they do recommend, like you said, right when you put the game in, it recommends you should install this.
Yeah.
What if you have an arcade?
Right. Exactly. Well, you're SOL.
Get a really, really bad flash drive.
It doesn't run any faster. That's for sure. Maybe the textures come in quicker.
Well, it couldn't run any faster. Like, I mean, that thing was the argument is that it runs really fast. Like that's one of the things that's been great about it.
But I mean, load times aren't any lower. There aren't any, it's not.
Curious to see what they'll do with DLC too.
That's it's beautiful game. Man, it's
so we all
beautiful.
Got 360 copies. Every outlet got 360 copies to review, which has become sort of an standardized practice. However, this is an id game. PC is a big deal, and at the time, we were all sort of okay. So they're being protective about the code and potential copyright. People trying to pirate it, which does happen sadly, and didn't think twice about it. And then everybody got the PC code to unlock at the same time as everyone else did. And wow, it's got some problems.
Surprised by that. It's very un-id-like.
Yeah, I mean, at first, Jeff like hit me up. He's like, dude, this hardly runs. Now, Jeff has an HD 5970 ATI card. And right off the bat, ATI said, look, we screwed up. The special drivers we released have the wrong OpenGL in them. And they had that fixed by the end of the day on Tuesday. So good on them for that. However, even after fixing it, it doesn't seem to be completely fixed. You've got people still reporting flickering and absolute complete lockup and dropout. Goes to black screen or dumps to desktop. Like loads of problems for this first game on id Tech 5.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because their bread and butter used to be the PC, and it is a gorgeous engine and it is a show off of the engine. I mean, one of the things I didn't really mention is how varied the world is from point A to Z. By the time you're at the end of the game, you've seen such a wide variety of places and types of places. That you don't just stay in that dusty, sort of blown out, lazy Saturday afternoon in the West kind of place. You start there, but by the end, you're basically in Doom.
Wow, because it already looks so. I mean, just when you come out of that pod in the intro section of the game, and I just like sat and looked, like the clouds are just super. I mean, it's super bright and just gorgeous. And I couldn't even imagine. I mean, it looked good on the 360, but if you had like a super pimp PC with a great video card,
but what the hell with it not working on PC?
For guys who spend, look,
this is not intended to be a swipe at id. These guys hold themselves out as technology wizards. Right. They say, hey, look, we are the baddest motherfuckers when it comes to creating game engines. Well, then, you do sort of expect that you guys have been working on the engine for a long time. You knew where the drivers were for these cards. Granted, now, a lot of times in development, what will happen is the developer will receive, pre-beta builds of drivers for the video cards. However, they've got to be testing this. And I mean, I'm not going to say that they didn't test it. Obviously, they did test it. But, that's why people immediately go, well, did you even test the thing? Like, here we have pretty standard builds. Here we have pretty standard PCs. And we're having, baseline driver issues, driver malfunction problems.
Well, when they announced id Tech 5, they announced Rage and id Tech 5 at the same time at QuakeCon. And that was the one thing they brought you in a room. And they're like, it's going to work on all of this. And they had the same game, same build running on everything. So That's why it is really mind-blowing that it really, your bread and butter.
Well, and it does really show a shift in development emphasis, at least. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to say it. It does show a shift.
They'll patch it.
Yeah.
But it shows in the bigger scheme of things how important the console version of the engine has become.
And Which is ironic because we're at that point where...
The PCs can smoke them.
Just smoke them. So you would want to show off your engine on the baddest motherfucker on the block.
And you know, the other thing that stood out to Jeff, he said right off the bat, was the first thing he did once he like got the game installed on Tuesday at midnight was go into the video options screen, and there was like next to nothing he could play with. Hmm. As opposed to, you know, like you think like PC from id, you're going to have like 10 million different variables you'll be able to change. He's like, nope. Yeah. Now, I'm sure there's going to be maybe a console activated at some point where you'll be able
to enter. Crysis 2, I think, was like that too, as well, where there wasn't a lot of options for video.
And you know the argument... And the argument the developer will make there is that they have the ability to probe your hardware pretty well and say, okay, based off of what you've got and how you're running, here's where our engine needs to be set to get the best experience.
Yeah.
And
I sort of bristle at that.
I do
it's
too.
It's funny, but I do. I'm like, I'm willing to give up this or that or,
dude,
you know.
If you're a console gamer, that's great. Yeah. That's the iron. People code to the iron. But if you're a PC gamer, you're into making those tweaks. Like, that's the reason you're a freaking PC gamer is so that you can have those tweaks to play with.
Exactly.
It ought to be your decision, you know, how much AA you're willing to live with a performance hit on, or how much stenciling of the shadows you want done before you're going to, like, say, you know what? I'm not happy with that performance right there. I'm gonna change this variable. I'm going to do something different here. Like, that's your call, right?
Exactly.
And anyway... Enough labored breath over that. What do you think people are going to respond to Doom 4 when they like dial the frame rate down just to add in special effects?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a little, because it's silky smooth. And
yeah,
I love that about it. It's always butter. You know, it's always butter. Like Rage. So
I wonder what the difference would be. I mean, it's gonna be really interesting because, you know, they've already said, hey, you know, Doom 4 is going to be 30 frames per second on console, but.
Yeah,
we're going to do all this other stuff with special effects. I have to think a lot of that probably will be lighting related, huh?
Because Doom, shadows and
because it relies on
Doom 3. Holy crap, it was Shadow Fest,
right? And so I'm thinking
it's
relies
dark in the monster closet, dude.
Mm-hmm. And those are always a big performance hit, and especially thinking now, like obviously they've sent this engine to run on PS3 360 grade hardware, so I could see why they'd have to take that hit there. Again, another reason the PC version should be that much better.
The shadow equations in John Carmack's head are going to figure it out. It will be awesome. I know this.
We are the shadow equations.
They are. They speak to him.
Dude, I loved their first album.
And who are they a cover band of?
They're a cover band of Hall & Oates? I don't know.
Sure. Shadow Equation. Nice. I like it.
I got nothing.
They could be the Police and play Ghost in the Machine. So, you know, the other big game, you're talking about big worlds.
Speaking of Rage.
Speaking of Rage.
Let's talk about games that
generate
it.
There's your transition. you're not a Dark Souls fan then.
Well, I'm curious to hear what you think, because I have played... maybe 4 hours of Dark Souls, and I've probably gotten about 15 minutes into it.
Well, no.
In game.
No, you've gotten that many hours into it. You're just equating them in your head because of the way you've been programmed to see...
How many times I've replayed the same section.
Because of the way you've been programmed to look at progression in a game. And
mayhaps.
And these two games make you look at progression in the game in a much different manner. Because you have to learn that dying... is an accepted part of this reality. I mean, look, you're fucking dead in the first place. It's not like you were. It's not like you start the game alive. You start the game dead. You have to regain your humanity anyway. So dying, you live with it.
Can I explain my thought process through this? Because I did not play Demon's Souls. Didn't play it.
All right. So let us explain the game real quickly. Although I
you died in that game too. I tried it too.
I didn't play it. I never played it. And a lot of the
hardcore players, bear with us for a brief moment while we explain to everybody in the audience like what Demon's Souls and Dark Souls are. They are a very they're a modern take on a very old school sort of Kingsfield. You are you're a fantasy warrior. There's a number of different types you can play that range from magic wielding to thief style to knights, and you go into this world in. Full, you know, fully realized 3D with a very strong physics system. It's very combat heavy, and it has a very detailed combat system where your arms are mapped right and left to the right and left triggers on the controller, and you fight it out with these very challenging enemies mm-hmm. who oftentimes kill you while you're trying to level up and advance through to the end of the game.
Yes.
So
I never played.
That's a very brief overview. But
right. I never played Demon's Souls. A lot of the listeners of the show, there was a lot of recommending of that game. And I just all of the BS surrounding it, I avoided it consciously because I know my own disposition and it doesn't seem like a game that fits my disposition.
I'll be honest. I was shocked when I saw on Twitter you were playing this.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is he doing to himself?
Well, I wanted to give this game a chance because a lot of people recommended Demon's Souls and I just felt like I missed the window of that and I could go back and play it, but it's difficult. But now we have this new one on the horizon.
Yep.
It's not a sequel. It's not,
spiritual successor.
Spiritual successor. I can get into it fresh. Okay. So, but it's important that I don't have any precedent of having experience with that game. So, but I knew all of the stuff about it. So I sat down.
Which sadly means that you actually knew nothing about it because that's part of the hook of the game.
Right. Part of the hook of the game is they don't tell you crap, right? Which is kind of cool in a way. You know, I'm an MMO guy. I know how when you log onto an MMO, you don't know anything. The manual's useless because everything's changed, you know. So I start up. I roll up a knight, okay?
Knight's a good choice.
I tend to play paladins, knights. Those are the characters that I associate with most. Okay.
I went wanderer, by the way.
Okay, cool. I hear Brian Leahy is also a wanderer.
And you know, thing for like later on in the game, with after about 8 to 10 hours, it really doesn't matter what you started with.
Well,
but that's a whole other subject.
Let me explain my experience with this. Okay, so I also was drawn to the knight because you start at level 5,
yep.
Whereas some of them start at level 2, 1. I was like, oh, well, start at level 5, that sounds better. 5 is higher than 1. So I...
Reverse.
I start the game, you get your sword... You get your shield, not that, it's actually the reverse order of that, but yeah, and there's like training dummies, basically, they're little ghouls that start, I kill them in a couple shots, I'm like, okay,
Do they kill you too?
No, they don't really fight back. They fight back barely.
Can you die though?
You could, but I was like, oh, well, I don't see what people have been saying. And the combat system, I will say, is really cool, really, really cool. Because you really do have to think it out. You have to think, okay, I'm going to block this with my shield. I'm going to, I'm going to hop back. I'm going to parry. All those elements are there. It's all tied into animation cycle, and you get caught in moments. And there's a certain mentality in which that's very realistic because it is difficult to sort of fight in armor, etc.
Dude, okay, to me, like since we talk about combat for a second, to me, the combat in this game is the best. Swords and shields combat in any game I've ever played. Like,
yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people love about it.
I think maybe, I mean, Skyrim, I know, has aspirations to improve a lot on where Oblivion was, but I mean, this thing is it is unbelievable because of all the physics that are applied to it, how great it feels to be, whether it is, and switching weapons is a big thing because you a lot of times have to know, like, how do I use this weapon?
However, there's no explanation of that at all.
You just sort of learn it.
You have to.
You have to learn it.
Right.
I mean, you learn that I'm in a constricted space. I can't swing my long sword. I can't get my long sword around.
There's stuff that's clearly mapped to the directional pad in on your HUD, yet, for example, a life potion. And if you were a normal game, you'd hit down on the D-pad to select that. That's not what happens. You have to drink it, and it takes animation cycle, and you're vulnerable, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
anyway,
dude, it's not Diablo. Like, yeah,
Diablo. It's not an action.
You have
it's
to
not an action
like
game.
That's
it's a
really cool.
Game.
You have to, like when you're fighting these guys, you need to maybe at times get a stunning blow in there so that you can beat a little tactical retreat, hit your Cestus, and then get your health back up because you got to wait for it to recover, and then come back into the fight.
Not disagreeing with any of that.
Okay,
as I said, elegant, really interesting combat system.
Amazing.
So I'm playing my knight, right? Killing my combat dummies. Oh, this is all right. This is cool. Walk through the white light the first time.
Yeah.
Giant demon on the ground. It says, you read that. It's like, oh, run. You should run. Okay. Because there's a giant demon there. Get it. Run, avoid demon. Okay. Go back. Have to fight demon again. You're on the thing. He on the ledge. By the way, if you consider these spoilers, this is literally the first 5 minutes of the game. So
yeah, this is the basic tutorial.
So he smashes the ledge I'm standing on. I fall. It tells you, how to do a stabby down motion. I do a stabby down. Takes off half his life. I'm like, okay, I have to fight this guy. Get it. He kills me a few times, but I eventually figure out how to kill him. I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. This isn't bad. This is not bad. That was a giant demon. Of course he's going to kill. I get it. I'm learning. I feel like I'm figuring it out. Then that giant hawk comes, or giant crow, raven comes, takes me to the next area. All right. The beginning. Now I'm in the real beginning of the
game. The game just begun.
Exactly. So now we have the real part of the game where I walk forward a little ways.
Oh, no. And I know where you went.
Did
you
go? A skeleton.
You went to the graveyard. Oh, God.
A skeleton came out of the ground. A skeleton.
You're not supposed to go that way.
Really?
Well, I think you learned that.
Well, the thing...
Was there not a sign on the ground that says, don't go this way?
There's a lot of signs on the ground. So the skeleton murdered me immediately. Murdered me ruthlessly. A skeleton. In most games, boop, 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 no problem.
Zelda, you kicked the shit out of those guys.
No, I whacked on that skeleton. I blocked his... I would get knocked out of position.
Was it a normal-sized skeleton or a really big one?
No, regular skeleton.
Oh, you didn't even... Yeah, there's a big one after that.
He killed me. Raped my dead corpse, right? Like, there was rape.
wow.
Yeah. Okay, but I'm cool with this. I get it. This is how this game is supposed to be. I'm not getting mad. I'm in it to win it, right? So I come back. I look at the ground. There's a bloodstain that says, run past these guys. Just avoid them. It says, avoid these guys.
Oh, dude, that's a pro.
So I'm like, okay, pro tip, do it.
But it's not a pro tip that you should use if you don't know what you're doing.
My knight is running in his heavy armor. He's slow. He's really slow, slow,
because you ran out of endurance?
Well, it's not that I ran out of endurance. He's just slow.
Oh. Okay.
So I run, of course, 12 other skeletons. Yep. Yeah, they're after me, right? But I run down to the catacombs. That's where the catacombs are. Into the catacombs. They don't lose aggro. They still follow you forever. Mm-hmm. Rock into the catacombs. A bomb goes off. Kills me. So now I'm in the cat. Now my souls that I've been acquiring that are very important, they're everything. They're down in the catacombs, and I need to get them before I die again, so that I don't lose them forever. Because I will lose them forever should I not get them. So then I have to sprint again, skeleton, down into the catacombs, get my souls just before I die. I'm like, this is not working. Walk a little farther, find another thing that says skeletons are fireworks against them. I'm like, well, I don't have fire.
By the way, so if you haven't played the game before, a object that you can buy fairly early on in the game if you don't go the wrong direction.
If you find a guy that sells stuff, which I did not find.
Oh, God.
Did not find that guy.
Oh, man.
So it says fireworks against them. Don't have fire.
Allows you to leave notes in
the... I know what I'll do. I'll roll up a pyromancer. I'll just play the beginning again, because now I know. Roll up a pyromancer. Now, this is where the game really impressed me, because I was shocked at how different a different class feels. Mm-hmm. Most games...
Off the start, yeah.
Most games, they want you to be able to do anything with anybody, and it's really... Class differentiation is not really a big deal. But his higher dexterity allowed him to move faster all the time, which is really a big deal. His different equipment worked differently. I had a crappy wooden axe with a hole in it instead of a big kite shield. So he got smacked around a little bit, but I made it through the beginning part again, killed my big monster again, actually did it much more efficiently this time. Loving it. Dig it. Get to the skeletons. Skeletons, fuck you. I got fire now. I'm a pyro motherfucking mancer. Fire. Boom. Fire on that skeleton. One hit. Half of his life. Boom. Second fire. He's dead. I feel like a king. This is why people love this game. This is amazing. Second skeleton comes up. Boom, fire. All right. Huh, wait a minute. I only have 8 fire charges. I'm down. It takes 2 fire charges to kill each skeleton. And if I... That's 4 skeletons I can kill. There's 12 on my way to the catacombs. And if I want more charges, I go and rest at the bonfire, which respawns all the enemies. So I can't kill them all. Can't run away from them all. Can't fight them all.
Okay, so
I'm doing my best here.
Can I bring an intermission?
Yeah,
because I feel like I need to bring an intermission.
Now this may have dragged on too long.
Because here's the thing. Yeah. I think a lot of people have that sort of initial experience with the game, and that's number one. That's unfortunate, and number two, it's indicative of how very different Dark Souls, Demon Souls is from anything you've ever played. And it's because you go in with I don't even know that it's like an expectation. It's like an ingrained, like, oh, I go into this game and you see you went a direction, right?
Yes.
And it so happens that the direction you went is just completely not the direction you're supposed to go. But one of the things about this game is that it doesn't it doesn't post signs that right. say, hey, adventurer, don't go this direction until you are level 30.
Right.
It lets you, you're supposed to be, it is genuinely role-playing to the extent of, oh, I went into the skeletons and got the shit kicked out of me. I shouldn't go back there. Well, you have to think like if you were a dead soul, would you go back to this? You'd be like, fuck no, I'm not going back to the skeletons. They kicked the crap out of me.
But as video games train you to do that. You're like, I agree.
How can I figure out this puzzle?
Vanquish
roadblock, yes. But let me just say, that is where I completely respect this game because it takes the idea of putting you in a medieval situation very seriously.
Yes, it does.
And I totally respect that. However...
However,
the moment that I die, lose my souls, don't get back to my corpse to get my souls and die again is so
infuriating.
It's so, to forgive the pun, soul crushing that it just saps my desire to do it again.
Let the hate flow through you.
Why? Flames from the side of my face. My girlfriend goes, you can't play this anymore. I'm sorry. You can't play this. If you want me to stay here, you can't play this anymore.
She really?
Yeah. She's like, I'm not going to sit next to you while that level of yelling comes out of your face.
I'm pretty sure that my girlfriend would have done the same had she been there. But here's the thing is that when you reach that point, you got to put the controller down. And then you have to learn. And admittedly.
Go buy the guidebook.
No, you don't really need to go by the guidebook because one of the beauties of the Souls games is you really can simply, the dirty secret is they're actually not hard because you are in ultimate control of progressing in the game. Because
this isn't what I read on your Twitter. You're being very much more defending and positive on this game than I seem to have read on
your Twitter. I'm going to tell you in a minute that it's not for me. But I'm going to tell you that as a game critic and someone who's like learned, like I really appreciate a lot of things the game does. Like I really appreciate why people like it. You are ultimately in complete control. The way the system works is that you have these souls, and every time you kill one of these, like most of them are skeletal or hollow men. Once you kill them, then you get a certain number of souls from them. And souls,
I didn't get any for killing the skeletons that I killed.
Oh, I guess they don't have souls then.
Yeah, they don't have souls then. I wasted my time.
I went that direction once and got my. I went that direction once and got just beat to hell. And then I did. And maybe this is because I played Demon Souls. I just started exploring around. And what you need to do is explore around that campfire area.
What do I find there?
Well, you find. Well, do you? So
tell me what way to go.
Okay.
Because I explored in the sense that I ran from the skeletons in various directions.
So unlike many dungeoning games, you really should start the game by going for the upper bell, not the lower bell.
Oh.
And so you'll want to go up, and there's a rock stair that's hewn into the cliff wall.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's where you want to go.
But I went up there, and I didn't find how to continue to go up. But
well, as you go up there, you'll hit some rocks that lead you up to the aqueduct, and then you'll go across the aqueduct, and you'll be into the very beginning part of the game. Okay, and
that's all I did wrong is go the wrong way. Well, that feels better.
But that's I get why it's frustrating. But I also think it's cool because the reality is like the skeletons are so very hard that they should have like been assigned like, look, you're like dumbass, don't go this way. The same thing happens.
But
that's
completely counterintuitive to every video game that has ever been made.
But it is actually intuitive.
It is intuitive.
It is actually intuitive
to the sort of internal logic of the
of a
presumed
person.
Situation.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, wow, these guys are beating the crap out of me. Maybe I shouldn't go that way.
No, I again, I completely respect the level of commitment to that fiction.
Uh-huh.
Right? The process of it, the minute-to-minute process.
I want you to play 2 more hours of it.
Oh, way more of it. I'm not walking away from this.
I think you might.
I can't hang out with my girlfriend.
I think you might.
But I
think you should play a couple hours of it just to see like some of the things that Demon Souls has done that is really like. First of all, the world is fantastic to explore, and it encourages you to explore. And there's like lots of great stuff to find.
I have not seen any of that yet. Where's the reward for looking around?
Man, the architecture of even like the first area that you go into in the upper city is just it's so complex and so well put together, and there are places you see that you ultimately will learn how to get to, And the system that you need to learn, and this is the thing you just got to get accustomed to, is once you get to that first bonfire, is like the bonfire is your home base.
Yeah.
Every time you hit the bonfire, it re-triggers everything around you.
Yeah.
So you soul farm, because souls are the
only... that's what... I knew that, right? And that's what pissed me off about when I killed the skeleton. He didn't give any souls, because like, I could just kill this one skeleton and get him responding and killing him, but then
souls. So souls are the currency of the game, and they do everything for you. They are used to level up your character. They're used to buy equipment. They are you sort of get to where you can build up enough to also get your humanity back. But that's a whole other question. And we're not going to do a lot of other things. Maybe we'll have to come back to Dark Souls again.
I'm playing it this week.
So hold it then, because I'm not here next week. But then we'll talk.
Damn you!
We can talk about it again the week after.
All right.
This is not a game that's going away. But don't let individual deaths overwhelm you and get pissed off at it. When you start to get mad, put the game down and come back to it another time.
I don't mind dying individually. I mind dying and losing everything I had because I couldn't get back
to it. So one of the coolest parts of the game is that there's this risk-reward relationship that you start to develop once you've like gotten into a bonfire you're working out of like, how long can I go with this bank of chips, and the chips are my souls, before I lose them.
Push your luck.
And if I lose them, can I get back to this spot to restore? And that's really cool. That's a cool risk reward system.
To reinforce the thing I said that we were both saying about the sort of commitment to the fiction is I have never, ever in my life of playing video games been physically scared. Like I walked into that catacomb and it's dark.
You
can't see ahead of you. You don't know what's there. And I'm terrified that a random enemy is going to be there, like the simplest skeleton.
You have no
enemy.
Idea what's ahead, even. I mean, there's so much stuff ahead.
So in that sense, it's really intriguing, but I found so little reward. But maybe I just went the wrong direction.
We'll come back to Dark Souls, but be all and end all of this for me is that as I am also now ready and willing to admit that for me, it's not my cup of tea.
So tell me why.
Because
you don't want to do this to yourself.
We'll take a short break. When we come back on the other side, we'll wrap up Dark Souls for this episode, and then we'll table it for a little future time when Jeff's had a chance to look at it. We're going to talk about some iPhone stuff. We still have some news. We've got your feedback still to come. Stick around. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back.
This really feels really good and just really dialed into. It's so good. You have to play it.
It's interesting you say really that game oftentimes broke down to cover, fire, fire, fire. Do different things. Roadie run. Do different things.
You really do have to play it.
Cover, fire, fire, fire.
They had a lot of great ideas. There were some things, and they've evolved it so much that, like,
you really do have to play
doing
it.
Doing so many different things in the game.
A gaggle.
They had a lot of great ideas.
It's ticking down, and you can, like, run up and BABA select start.
Blow yourself up.
Ticking down, BABA select start.
Blow yourself up. They had a lot of great ideas.
Go rushing at the bad guys, and you
cover, fire, fire, fire.
Die, and you respawn.
Go rushing at the bad guys, and you die, and you respawn.
Do you think it's weird that I'm not, like, rushing out to go buy a copy right now?
Yes. Yeah. It's really good.
Yes. It's a very good
roadie run, roadie run, roadie run, roadie run. Roadie run, roadie run, roadie run, roadie run. Roadie run, roadie run, roadie run, roadie run. Roadie run, roadie run, roadie run. I can't even do it right in real world. I just have to have Mr. Del Rio on the remix section there for us. All right, so the Dark Souls conversation, like, spilled straight into the break, and we just kept on ranting about it. And we need to pick that back up.
Well, Billy had something to say.
Well, it's just, you know, I played the first game and I ran
into
the same. I played it until I got pissed off and was like, fuck this. Why is this fun? Like, I don't want to, you know, pay $60 to get punched in the junk over and over and over again. Like,
you can do that for way less.
I'd like to play $60, pay $60 and play through a game and enjoy it. Some people are super hardcore, but then I also see, all these press people and, you know, people like you saying, I played this. And, you know, I think people are just saying it just to say that they fucking play this game because I don't. You know, if I was a kid and I put $60, you know, I only had $60 for one game this holiday season and ended up with that.
Argue that it might be the best you ever spent because you could get so much out of the game.
Wow. Yeah, punched in the balls fucking over and over and over again.
Stop. Okay. Why? I want to address that. If I had not played Demon's Souls, then I would understand that. But once you've played any of these games, or if you even look in a little bit, you play these games fundamentally differently. The reason you're getting punched in the balls, as you put it, is because you're going too fast, you're running too far forward, and you're not playing. This is a game to approach. Unless you are a pro, You shouldn't be sprinting through this game. Unless you are a pro, you shouldn't be trying to get places that are resisting
for me,
you very heavily.
It's a
heavily.
Design fail if, Jeff, as a pro gamer, as I would say you are, you know, you've played enough video games to know what you're supposed to do. If you go the right, it just seems
that if you go someplace and get your ass kicked, you keep trying to go there. That's not sensible.
Well, that's the key thing for me is that I approached the first skeleton that I fought as, okay, I'm going to be patient. I'm going to embrace this game and I'm going to try to take it on its own terms. And I'm the problem.
But you did lock into beating the skeleton.
Well, by rerolling a new character that had fire damage.
Right. What I'm saying is you locked into the idea of beating the skeleton. And here's the thing. Like, this is where a lot of this creeps in, is that both these games, one of the things that is the pull for people who like them is that you literally discover everything about the game.
I think that's amazing. But I'm
14 and a half hours into the game, and I'm still not sure that I could explain to you all of the like, what's so great about the... Like, I know exactly why I need my humanity. I know when I need my humanity. But, like, the humanity system is a bit perplexing still to me. And or do I know exactly when to risk and when not to risk on my souls? No. But do I still get hit by traps and stuff that kill me right away? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm torn because I do appreciate the idea of that, but there's no context to me supposing to understand that this is the wrong way for me to have gone. Like, yes, in a sort of global idea of you're dying this way, so stop going that way, but I'm conditioned to go, I'm doing the thing wrong.
I agree.
I need to do this better.
It's just a different sort of game.
Sucking less. And so why am I not sucking less? But it's like, no, I was the deck was stacked against me that direction. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But it wasn't stacked. That's the next part of the world. It's a real role-playing game world where instead of there being a gate in front of that area that you can't open until you get the key from the area that you would have solved first, that area is there.
I dig that in theory. It's just the moment-to-moment realization of how that was realized for me just made me feel bad.
So take it slow. Get up to the first area, build up your souls, bank them, go back. And remember, every time you go back to the bonfire, it respawns everybody. So you can go out and kill them all over and collect their souls all over again.
Well, but I was never getting any souls.
Okay. So
you know what I mean?
Go to the right direction, go to the bonfire, collect souls, level up. Like, you haven't even leveled up then.
No, I leveled up because of the souls that I got from the very first area.
Okay, you've got a lot of leveling to do.
Oh, yeah?
And that's why I was saying the game...
That's what I said. I'm like 15 minutes into the game, but I've been playing for like almost 4 hours.
And that's why I was saying the game is actually sort of easy, is because ultimately, you're in complete control of whatever level. Like, if you go up into that first area, you could sit there and grind souls to make yourself so high level that everything through the rest of the game was easy.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to try... Going the
it's
going to
take a while.
It was not clear. I did search around. It wasn't clear to me that there was another direction.
Okay. Do you want another little nugget?
Give me a nugget, dude.
Okay. The other nugget is that as you're building your character, keep in mind that every time you level up, you'll be able to increase an attribute by 1 point.
Yes, I noticed that.
The incremental cost will rise with each level. The incremental cost in souls will rise with each level, regardless of what stat you're promoting. So
does that mean I want to even things out or go heavy in one direction?
You want to think about minimaxing and you want to think about where you want to spend your points. Because you could sit there, because once you've gotten, say, your vitality up to 30,
right,
going to 31 is going to cost you the same 5,000 souls as moving your dexterity, if you never do dexterity, from 11 to 12.
Here's the thing that pisses me off about this. This just leads me to go, I should investigate this on the internet. I don't want to invest time and energy doing the wrong thing, but that's not how the game...
That defeats the purpose of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I get it.
So fuck that. Because I don't want to have to like read some dude's fact about this. Fuck that. Like, I want to learn it, but learning it is a painful, often wrong-headed process that gets me down the wrong corridor and I'm stuck in the catacombs being ass-raped by a skeleton?
That sounds fun as hell, man. I'm totally on board.
Anyway, I'm sticking with it.
When you go up to the I think when you go up to the place where you're supposed to head in the first place, like, you'll really be able to enjoy the combat because the combat is fantastic. You're fighting a lot of hollow guys with different weapons, and there's a tremendous amount of cool...
Dude, just go upstairs. Level 2 dudes.
Level 10.
Didn't you know that?
Upstairs.
Didn't you read that on the ground?
I should have read that on the ground.
Tons of great...
Somebody should write that on the ground.
Go upstairs! Don't listen to the other guy.
You guys, right.
Sorry,
you
I'm
guys
really
are douchebags.
Damn game, hey, too long.
To each their own.
To each their own. All right. How about that? That's fair enough. You guys love your iPhones. This week, Apple announced the iPhone 4S, not the...
I call it the 4s.
The 4s?
Yeah.
iPhone 4s, not the 5 that everybody hoped it would be. Of course, as many people have pointed out, if you looked at their cycle, everyone should have known it was going to be the 4S because it's an every other year thing. But then, you know, they also had, let's see, Caps was at the Flash thing. So Sweeney was... Or no, Caps was
at the iPhone thing.
Caps was at the iPhone thing.
Yes.
Where they showed Infinity Blade 2 running on the new dual-core A5 processor and the iPhone 4S with 7 times the graphics performance of our previous model.
Yes, further, you know, separating the iOS market. You can't play it on this one. You can play it on that one.
Yeah, no, you can play it on iPhone 4. It probably won't perform as well.
My 3GS. What about that? My free 3GS that I just, because I just signed up for, because I want to get in on all this iPhone action that people are talking about. I just went down to my local iPhone dispensary, got my
local iPhone dispensary.
The 3GS for free because I heard it on the internets. They tell me that I can get it for free. So I
want to
play that stuff. So can I play that on my new free 3GS?
I think that's to
I
be.
Think that's a big no.
To be determined, but.
I'm still mad at Demon's Souls.
I think Epic is going to allow you to play Infinity Blade 2 on your iPhone 4. They like making money. They made a shitload on the first one. They want to continue that. And they already know that not everybody's going to hop on the bandwagon to jump on the 4S.
I'd be happy if they just made the game fun.
Oh, true.
It's fun.
You don't like swiping? What's wrong with swiping?
You know what? So, like...
Dude, I watched you play some stupid Stickman golf game on your iPad, and you're gonna honestly tell me that Infinity Blade is not better than that Stickman golf game.
Infinity Blade is not better than Stickman. Super Stickman Golf is amazing. Super Stickman Golf.
Age old debate: Stickman Golf or Infinity Blade?
Okay.
Super Stickman Golf is.
You can take your Stickman and your Dark Souls and enjoy. To each their own.
You can stick your damn man when the Dark Souls don't shine.
Heyo.
I think the thing is that
but you're not an iPhone.
I watched Donald Mustard explain at GDC about how they built Infinity Blade, and I agree that the baseline thing of swiping and swordplay is cool, but that's all it is. It's like okay, that was fun, but there's nothing more to it.
There's blocks. There's dodges.
Okay,
it's a freaking iPhone game. It's not.
It's very. I guess my response is based on how
it's not Oblivion,
on how glorified it is.
All right, Stickman Golf.
It's quite glorified of like Infinity Blade is amazing and look at how fantastic.
It's pretty and it's easy to play with your finger, just like some other things.
Like Stickman.
You have been
Golf.
Around me far too long.
Yeah,
obviously,
I know,
I am. Amy's like, God, I've got to get him away from that guy. That's awful.
No, but as an iPhone, I mean, are you going to hop on the bandwagon? Are you going to go upgrade? Are you pre-ordering on Friday?
No. The S for me stands for some more time before you upgrade.
Mm.
Yeah. I'll wait for 5. That's kind of what I did before anyway. No, I don't need it.
All right.
The 4 is fine. And I think that the supposedly iOS 5 is going to be a performance improvement on the 4 anyway.
You don't want to know if you should be wearing a raincoat today?
I have no... clearly today we should have been, but...
Siri, should I wear a raincoat today? Now, that would be interesting. I wonder if it would understand that.
It did. That was what they did in the press conference, yes.
Okay, because I remember watching him, like, he said, like, Siri, what's the weather like today? Siri, what's the hourly highest today? Or something like, oh, come on, Jesus.
Have you ever wanted to Bing Siri?
Wow.
No? Where's the pig? Anyway.
No, I think the new camera's... I mean,
the camera is pretty
amazing. I actually upgraded from a 3G to a 3GS for the camera and video, and this time I don't think I'm going to do it.
The camera is really pretty cool looking, but...
Yeah. I mean, the Siri stuff I think is interesting, but I'm already used to Googling everything anyway, or using my Maps functionality, or, you know, all of that. So,
see, now you say I'm not an iPhone guy, but I think the 4S is really fucking pretty impressive. Dual-core processor on that thing, and it's their internal iron, so I think it's going to be written very well to that.
Does my Siri app that I have on my 4 not work anymore? Is that how?
Oh.
Okay. I have that app.
What does it do?
It's the same thing Siri does. I mean, they bought the company that made that app.
Yeah. So. It's a 99-cent app.
I think it was free, actually. I have it, so it must have been free.
And the camera is impressive, and we're not a cell phone like show or whatever, but like the video stabilization that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. World phone.
Oh, and World phone built in the same case. So, I mean, I think they did a great job for just like the 3GS became like the 3 that everyone was like, oh, that shit's badass.
The 4S is. You know what the difference is?
Huh.
No new form factor. So that doesn't have the gee whiz, wow, I can show everybody I got the newer one than you has.
That's good. I just bought this freaking Metal Gear case. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, but I think that they underestimate how much the...
Shiny and new?
Yeah. They're like, oh, I whip it out at a party and I can show everybody that I has,
that's true.
I has greater than you has.
But isn't that the theory that everyone complains about with Android, with everyone having like the new hottest, neatest phone?
I mean, everyone hates it because the people who hate it are the people that didn't get the new one.
It's an argument.
Yeah. Anyway, we can stop talking about phones now.
I don't know. I should have a Galaxy S2 shortly, so I'll be able to compare and take a look at it, which people think is super sexy.
As long as it has an S in it, I think it's probably a good thing.
As long as you're saving your money and you have an iPad, I think you should go get Crimson Steam Pirates because it's fucking awesome.
I promised I would play that last week, and I did not.
Yeah, and you really need to play it. It's so fun. It's turn-based tactical naval combat with really cool units it has tons of style to it. Like Billy's over there, they built that in like 6 days. I was like, I don't care, it's awesome. It's so fun. If you like Sid Meier's Pirates, which I like, did you like Pirates?
Yeah.
Okay, so I like Pirates, except I found that on the iPad.
I never played on the iPad though.
So I found that on the iPad, the control of the ship, since it's all in real-time combat where you're swiping with your finger back and forth, was a little bit kludgy.
Oh, you just swipe?
Yeah. You just swipe.
Really? And that's fucking interesting.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hater.
And
sorry. Hey, man.
Not even going to go
into it. Fair game.
I found that what I liked about this, because it was turn-based, is that, you know, you get to, obviously, you plan out all your moves. And it's very in-depth that, you know, you have a number of different ships. It brings in both submarines and airships as well. And the thing is, first chapter is free. So... And I would tell you, like, I spent the second chapter is $3 in app purchase. I spent the money, like, I got to the end of the first chapter, I was like, oh, I'm buying that, definitely.
That's cool.
Immediate purchase. I don't know what to say about it. If you like turn-based tactical combat, it's really, really fun.
The world is changing to in-app purchase.
It's really, really fun. Like, the way, I mean, all of the ships have different characteristics to them, so you have, like, different turn radiuses, different speeds, different armaments. You start getting all of that sort of cool naval combat where you're like, oh, okay, well, I need an escort ship that has anti-air capability, I need another escort ship that has, you know, sub-warfare capability, but then I need something that has long-range ability so I can bombard these forts over here. It's really... All of the different pieces for the rock, paper, scissor relationships that you get in a good tactical combat game work out really, really well in it. And
cool.
I really like it. I think it's really well put together. And it's pretty. And it looks good. It's fun. Crimson Sky Pirates is, I think, like a huge, huge win. Did you guys find any wins? You went over and checked out Nintendo's fall holiday lineup here recently.
Yeah, Bill and I both went over there together.
It was fun.
What'd you guys find?
Well, I was blown away by Mario 3D Land. That was the big win for me, because I think I had played two levels at E3 last year, and or this year, and I was sort of like, oh, it's Mario on the 3DS. Okay, all right. Well, I guess it's not that sort of device justifying app that I was hoping it would be. But this build, or I may have been the same build. Billy and I were talking about that. We're not sure.
It's questionable.
But at least I hadn't played some of the levels that they showed or that I was able to play now. And it's the 3D usage and the way that they manipulate the camera made me fall in love with it. And I'm so excited to play it on my 3DS. It's the first 3DS game that I'm like, I'm jonesing for that. Yeah, it's really cool. They do this really cool stuff with the camera where they pull it back behind Mario's head, but sort of above him. So you're not completely top down. You're sort of tilted back slightly. And then he'll come up to precipices.
Precipices.
You'll have to make these leaps that are so far down. It really makes you feel like you're looking very deeply down into your device, and you know, these like leaps of faith. Really cool. Super cool. What? Giggle pants. Anyway, and there was another level where the camera was sort of quarter, three quarters, sort of like what they did with Street Fighter on the 3DS, where it was sort of like three quarters, to the side. And I loved it. I loved how inventive it was. And it was using, you know, there's like deeper double coin things that you hit with your head.
Okay, can you imagine the gynecology simulator they can make with this thing?
Oh, Garnet,
really?
Come on. No one wants that.
As Del Rio just facepalms.
In fact, I'm pretty sure that's what the Kirby is. But
I'm sorry, it was stuck there. I just couldn't get it out of my head, so I had to say it.
Anyway.
Especially the way you were like, and you just looked down into this device.
Oh, God.
So did you, in your playing, did you feel it was weird that now that you, since you have an analog slide pad, that there's a run button? You know, like a la Mario 64?
It's funny. You mentioned that when we were talking, and I didn't think of that until you mentioned it. But once I mentioned it, I couldn't get it out of my head. It felt natural when I was playing it, just because that's how you play New Super Mario Brothers. That's how old Super Mario Brothers
2D.
Right, 2D, exactly. Right. And there are 2D, not 2D, but there are true side-scrolling levels.
And Mario 64, the remake for DS, had a run button, too, because you were playing with the D-pad.
So it felt Mario-esque, but then once you mentioned that, I was like, oh, yeah, I could just, it's just analog.
I'm a ruiner.
Yeah, you did ruin it. But you were digging on Mario Kart.
Mario Kart 7, which stupid fucking name, but whatever, I'm over it. It's cool, and I'm so excited they brought back coins. And I know this is such a silly thing, and you're looking at me with glazed eyes, like I don't.
But no, like, I'm actually just listening.
But they haven't.
He's
had,
still in his gynecology joke.
He's like, no, still funny in my head.
I had to get that. I can get that.
God,
I had to, like, it was so fucking stupid, but it was like stuck in my head, so I had to get it out of there. And now it's gone. Now I can listen.
But they brought coins back, which they haven't had coins since the Game Boy Advance version, which, you know, affect your top speed of your cart or whatever you're racing, and that really affected the game in the GBA version. And I love and. I'm so happy they brought it back. And my only other concern was that they brought in all these like fucked up vehicles, like hang gliders and boats and submarines. And
I think that's cool.
At first I thought like, oh shit, they're doing Diddy Kong Racing. This is going to be awful, but they're actually cool. Yeah. Like it works. So
yeah, from a strategic level, having the hang glider like pop out automatically when you make a jump, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can sort of shortcut that turn because I'm flying over it. But it's a risk. It's a risk reward, right? Because if I don't make it, I'm toast. I'll fall off the edge of the world.
Very curious if you can like huck red shells at some dude that's flying. Like, especially when you're playing multiplayer, that shit could really play into strategery.
Yeah.
So how much 3D did you use on Mario, and how much 3D did you use on Kart?
Both of them, I cranked it all the way up.
All the way up.
Yeah. Word.
That's a great sign, because you know, most of the first gen games, I definitely couldn't play with it cranked all the way up.
I think the Nintendo developed the in-house ones with the 3D on is really solid. I played Zelda, you know, I marathoned that game, as I said before on the show, and I had the 3D on all the time. Star Fox, same thing, all the way up. Bring it.
But now you can't see the color brown.
I keep walking to walls.
I have these headaches. I don't really understand why I have them. I keep like missing things walking to walls.
Why are there four of you? No, I think the 3D was really good.
I agree.
They also showed the new Kirby for Wii.
Oh, before you leave, what are they doing with multiplayer on Mario Kart? Because Mario Kart multiplayer...
They did not show any of that.
They did not.
They did not allow us to play multiplayer.
Why? How could they do
that? And the other thing I asked them about was snaking, if they've done anything to curb snaking. And they said, we've had that question a lot. And that was it. Another coy Nintendo answer. Yeah. Which means you're fucked and they're going to have snaking.
They show Mario Kart and they don't do multiplayer and they don't answer about snaking. Well,
snaking is something that's like inherent to Mario Kart. It's super fast power sliding.
A multiplayer, I think, for this game would be really, really, really important.
Well, no, it's going to have Nintendo Wi-Fi.
I know it's going to have that, but they didn't let you play it or check it out or like...
No.
No.
But it looked good. Playing against the computer. A lot of first places from this guy with the thumbs.
Yeah. Yeah. 150cc.
I'm a Toad guy, actually.
Are you?
Yeah. I rock Toad.
Yeah. All right.
Word.
There was a cool moment in the Mario 3D Land where you look through those binoculars that, like, at the top of the Empire State Building or something, and it's the gyroscope. So I thought it was cool that they were using the gyroscope with the 3D, but it was sort of disassociated with actual gameplay.
Yeah,
you weren't doing any action moments. You were just searching through the environment, and then if you find something, it rewards you.
Gotcha. And by virtue of the way they did it, it's implicit that you would move the device in front of you and turn and pivot as if you were looking through something, as opposed to trying to move the device by itself where you like lose the 3D effect.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of cool.
But Kirby was cool. Kirby's we did play multiplayer on.
Interesting. Because it's four-player Kirby, kind of like the new Super Mario Brothers Wii. But if Kirby dies, then the game's over.
Yeah, it's bizarre,
like
dude.
If player one dies, I'm sorry.
If pink Kirby, there's other Kirbys, but if pink Kirby's special, if he dies, everybody dies. Everybody else can die.
Yeah.
Pink Kirby
Respawn
can survive.
Like mother.
But if pink Kirby dies, game over.
Hmm.
Weird, right?
It's cute and fun.
It's interesting. I kind of like it. It's a different twist.
Yeah, but it makes it
means you're
what Billy said was like, well, then you
sorry, little Timmy, you're not fucking playing Kirby.
Yeah.
I'm holding the controller this time.
Right. You put the most skilled player on Kirby, or whoever's playing Kirby does the least risky stuff.
Yeah, stand back. Yeah. We'll kill everything and
then it's like an escort quest for Kirby.
It's like Dark Souls.
Oh yeah, and it's permadeaths in Kirby now. They have once you die twice and you'll get your souls back, then you
don't fuck with the skeletons.
You don't mess with the skeletons.
Get raped.
Never.
Kirby gets raped.
Put their bone in you.
Wow.
Anyway.
That took Nintendo to a whole level that they've never been before.
You have really been around me way too long.
God knows. Anyway, look cool, colorful and fun. And some of the steel, you know, sucking in the bad guys and then absorbing their power elements of it were really pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you also played Skyward Sword.
I was going to say, enough 3D stuff. I wonder about Skyward Sword.
As I did play Skyward Sword.
We both did. Billy played the boss battle, which from afar looked frustrating.
It did. Usually, in Zelda games, you kind of get some sort of a hint on what you're supposed to do to take out.
Right, there's like pattern recognition, and then you like learn how
you
to
can
deal
figure
with
it.
Them.
Out.
Yeah.
This was like a duel, like a sword duel.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's cool.
Against the emo dude.
Well, it sounds cool.
Yeah, I just couldn't figure out how to. He would like grab my sword, and all of a sudden the Team Nintendo guy's like, "Hey, pull back," and I'm like. Really? Okay. And then I did, you know, I figured that I didn't figure it out. I had to be told what to do, you know, and it was kind of frustrating. But this is, I mean, they are utilizing Wii Motion Plus. This is a Wii Motion Plus game.
This is gesture. They put all their chips on gesture.
So we knew they were going that direction.
Yes.
Good, bad, indifferent.
Well, here's the thing. It's going to be a 50-plus-hour game.
That's what Miyamoto says, 50 to 100 hours, which I would
they
say on the 100-hour side, you're probably, that's the collecting shit, and that's farming everything for all it's worth.
Right.
But for 50 hours, you know, it's different. You know, Twilight Princess, you could still lay on the couch sideways and whatever, just do the quick waggle and blah, blah, blah. This is fully, you know, slash left to right, slash up, down, diagonal, you know, stab, like... You're not sitting on the couch while you're playing this game. I don't think.
It seems like
you're standing?
Everything.
Well, what was the first thing they told you when you picked up the controller, Jeff?
Stand up. He said, stand up. I said, I like sitting. I thought that. I said, okay, I'll stand up. But I thought I like sitting.
Wow.
Yeah. They said, you got to play this game standing. I was, and then Billy's like, 50 hours. So,
you know, I mean, I don't think, you know, and this is something I think Nintendo's addressed in the past anyway, is, you know, you're not going to sit there, you know, it's not like skeletons, you know, one after another, you know, and different enemies one after another. Like, there's going to be exploring where you're going to be able to sit down and do that. But I think in those combat situations, you are getting up.
But, and it's not just, you know, it is slashing your sword around, raising your shield, shaking, you know, have to shake. Crossing them in front of you to do spin attacks. I mean, it's a lot of that in the combat. But then also you're pulling out your bow and arrow to trigger a switch.
Right.
And you're doing full-on
classic Zelda stuff.
Wii Sports.
Yeah, Wii Sports kind of pulling back the bow and arrow. And then you're guiding the new Beetle thing with, you know, kind of Wii Sports Resort airplane flying.
And every time Nintendo has done these things internally so far, those kind of things have all felt great. Those have been all the things like we're like holding the Wiimote and you're like, why do other game makers have such trouble getting this down right, and then Nintendo gets it right? Does it feel that way here?
Well, in all those situations, I would say you've probably been playing mini games,
right?
Right, mm-hmm. And this is not that.
It's a 50-hour mini game.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
You're
I'm gonna
not
have
sold.
To have a lot more time with it. We played it what 10-15 minutes.
Yeah,
each?
I will be there on day one. I'm a Zelda guy.
Of course,
I love this shit.
I know you will.
You know, I'm there. I've already pre-ordered my gold controller bundle deal. Like, I'm ready, but I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm nervous.
Yeah, I played for about 10-15 minutes, and at the end of it, my elbow hurt.
All right.
So maybe I am a broken down man. But yeah.
Well, look, maybe you can, I'm cautiously optimistic about our music break. It might be some great music for you to work out to. So check out Thunderhead with Sundog. And when we come back on the other side, we will hit some of the listener feedback and news and wrap up This Weekend Confirmed. Sundog from 17-year-old Thunderhead, dude. Big ups to you. That is awesome. You have... Look, I like drum and bass. You guys are slightly skeptical. That was a really good sound.
Sweet.
I'm definitely jamming on that. You want to send more demos? I will definitely put them on my iPod and rock out to them. I was loving that. Hey, speaking of music, by the way, when I was in Kyoto a couple weeks ago, of course, it was at Q Games. I got to play 4 a.m. again. And I just wanted to like real quickly throw in... Like, God, I fucking love that game. So love that game. Anyway, it's not even a game, really. I love that like music toy creation device thing. This really cool thing that they've figured out to do now is that, you remember when I was talking about how the game works, where it's a collection of tracks that you pull different samples of the track in and can mix and match and play with? What they've done now is they've added a layer to it where you can seamlessly link from like soundscape to soundscape to soundscape and keep stringing. So let's say you're in song one and you've like pulled together like the bass and the lead and the drums and the hi-hat for that. And you like are mixing on that. You can switch to another song and start pulling in tracks from that and really mix up the creation. And it'll hold whatever tracks you had from the track that you left, as long as they keep playing. As long as you don't overwrite them in the new song. So you can switch into new songs, pull samples out of them, and pull them into your own song while you're working on it. It's so crazy.
Is there a way to break it where it just sounds like crap?
There's no way to break it because the entire thing is built on top of the sequencer and you can't take it out of sequence.
That sounds so... I tweeted to Dylan the other day that that's going to be what's going to get me to get a Move controller.
Dude. It's amazing.
Like
The second time I was playing, so he's got like... They have like three new... Like, I guess each group of sounds obviously is a track, originally recorded track that you can pull different pieces of. They have three new ones, and one of them is like this really housey jam, and it has like the coolest solos with like horns and shit in it. And I was like, I'd go into like this one that was like really trancy and like start this trancy beat going, and then go over this like a little higher speed one and pull in like the hi-hat of that, and then hop over here to the house one and pull in like the solos out of that. And then, of course, you can dial and twist like all these effects on all of them.
Cool.
And it's just, It is so easy to get sucked up into that thing, and it really, like, it is totally 4 a.m. That was a good name change, by the way. 4 a.m. It is definitely 4 a.m. at the club. Billy, you wanted, like, as long as we're, like, catching up on games. Oh, that's right. You're saving that. Never mind. Almost blew his finishing move for
Can't
him.
Can't do that.
I could go either way, man.
No, that's fine. Covered. Let's catch up the news real quickly. Some things I wanted to bring to the listeners' intentions. Let's see. Where did I have them? Forza's out soon. Next week I'm not here, which sucks because the embargo is up, and we would normally talk about Forza, but we'll talk about Forza in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I have been playing it. Pretty amazing. Pretty awesome. I'm interested to see how people will view it, though, as an upgrade from 3.
Hmm.
I think that's definitely a challenge because they've been producing a lot of games. And in the face of that, Gran Turismo 5 going to $40, big deal number one, and getting the Spec 2.0 patch, which is a huge, huge patch.
Seems like direct competition. Like, hey, look, it's cheaper.
Well, and I think this is a really good move by Sony, and I hope that they will really get behind Gran Turismo because, you know, look, like, they put a ton of effort in developing that game, and it's really okay. So here's what's in Spec Patch 2.0. It has improved physics, improved AI, cockpit view for every car in the game now. Not a per Select. Car.
So it's all every car.
Every car has a cockpit view, but like all the low res, all the basic cars, it just has like a generic-y sort of cockpit. It doesn't have like you're not going to get into a 240SX that's in the low res version and see the exact cockpit out of a 240SX. But you can now drive if you prefer that view in that view. And it adds mid race saves for endurance races. This is a huge content upgrade for the game. There's also going to be some DLC that's coming out after that. But man. Gran Turismo 5 is no less a competitor a year later. I mean, one thing that happened by virtue of how long they spent on it is that it is a pretty fucking amazing racing game.
So they went platinum hits and they've got a giant patch.
And a giant free content upgrade.
That's cool.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's a pretty strong competition. Like, there's no reason if you have a PS3 that you should feel that upset about not having Forza access.
They should have featured Gran Turismo somehow in that new Michael commercial.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's funny.
It's fucking awesome.
The Michael commercial is really
Love
cool.
It.
Then you're right. They should have. They should have had like a driver there or something. Like
somehow.
Gran Turismo 5, I mean, admittedly, it was a long time coming and it needed patches when it came out, and the patches have been like sort of slow coming, but by now, and especially with the Spec 2.0 patch that's coming later this month, it's a legitimate AAA star game. Tim Sweeney showed off Unreal Engine 3 running in Flash 11 at the Adobe Developers Conference.
That's just nuts. That's nuts.
And he promises console quality games on a multitude of devices. I love how Zav, who wrote it up for us, joked that would mean like Flash powered refrigerators would have Quake running on them or something.
Yeah, right.
But here's the weird thing about Flash is that they might be running on a multitude of devices, but that's not going to be iOS. And evidently, it's not going to be Windows 8 because Windows 8 Metro doesn't include Flash either.
Exactly.
So what the hell is going on with Flash?
Feels like more people are jumping ship from Flash and they're going, look, all the cool things we can do.
It's bizarre. And yet here's Flash suddenly like making this big push that's really relevant.
Well, and Caps is at the iOS or the, you know, the iPhone thing. And
showing,
he's like, hey, whatever.
But maybe Flash is the way to make browser gaming indistinguishable from non-browser gaming.
Possibly.
And it just doesn't translate to mobile devices. It's just home PC.
Android devices run Flash just fine. And we know
who has those? No, I'm kidding.
That's what I say. We know how big a part of the market they've become. And we know they're going to be the big platform for at least the next year or two. Although people are now arguing Windows phones can catch up. I mean, who knows what's really going to happen in that arena. But we know that Android phones play them, and this would be a way to get a lot of that content into Android phones if you want to tap that market.
Yeah, and I think the whole console quality game stuff really is speaking to sitting in front of your PC and playing something that you don't have to download and install.
What about Android tablets?
Yeah, I've never had any personal firsthand experience with an Android tablet. Have you?
Yeah,
all I've heard is that they're less snappy than the iPad. There's still this delta of sort of feel.
Man, the iPad is a super elegant device.
Yeah.
Especially the iPad 2. The iPad 2 is a super elegant device.
Couldn't that scream to, you know, real games, real Facebook games? You know?
Flash-based?
I don't know.
I guess. I mean, I think that's what's going to happen with Facebook is we're going to get some more.
I'd rather play Unreal than fucking Farmville.
Yeah.
Sorry.
How many Sims requests do you get a day now?
It's all blocked.
Oh, you block them?
That stuff.
You play Unreal Tournament, but instead of frags, you just poke people. Poke.
Hey, you know they hid pokes.
Did they?
Yeah, they hid pokes.
I don't keep up with the Facebooks. I'm all too busy telling kids to get off my lawn.
And your
Let's
friendster.
Let's see. We had some recovery stuff from... That's big stuff. What else? Oh, there were a couple other quick things. Sega's got a couple of new games coming. Evidently, they're going to do Daytona USA. I mean, at least that's the predominant hint.
Because the world demanded it?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of oh my God, that's awesome hype. Once
really?
Okay. Once that dies down, what do you think the reception of an arcade, you know, classic arcade
racing
game?
Remember when they had the new Outrun? And the world was all excited about that for 14
Sega Rally,
minutes.
Same thing. I mean, as an XBLA PSN title, fine.
But yeah. No, that's perfect.
For
actually.
Me to drop $60 to buy a Daytona, I just don't see it happening. There's already games. There's way too many racing games that have way more features for that in that marketplace. But a Daytona USA XBLA PSN, fine.
Agreed.
And they're going to add another Yakuza game for me to add to my stack of unplayed Yakuza games and take hassles for it. They're going to bring... I can't believe it. They're bringing
you
over...
You went there. I was all ready to fucking tee up on that.
They're bringing up... They're bringing over of the end as Yakuza Dead Souls. So there you go.
Souls are so hot these days.
It's the new zombie.
Get ready. Get ready to take on zombies.
The new lens flare.
Zombies are the new lens flare.
Awesome.
I like it. Here's some of the feedback from last week. Billy didn't listen to the show, so I guess you're just gonna have to like act like you did. I'm just giving you shit, man. He's not even looking up. He's like, I'm gonna read ahead.
I'm crying in my.
Bailey AU was talking about our Gears and Resistance discussion and said, "Isn't it great that we're to the point that great developers recognize how to make awesome sequels? For a long time, it seemed like the first game in many series was always the best."
Really?
I thought that was an case. I didn't that was, that, so and especially considering he was talking about our Gears and Resistance conversation. Like, wait, Resistance 2 was better than Resistance? No,
well, that he is saying that it was the first game in the series was the best, but I'm saying that
no, he was talking about Gears and Resistance being great sequels and bucking the trends that used to be
he's saying the third in the series for both.
Well, this
you're giving two a pass.
I also think this generation was, I mean, usually sequels are better, but especially in this generation when a lot of the developers with the PS3 and Xbox 360, they were figuring out just how to make a game on this damn thing. And then, you know, like look at Assassin's Creed, perfect example. You know, the first game, game, amazing. You know,
that's why I want another Mirror's Edge so bad.
I think it's just a matter of memory. I mean, let's look at Gran Turismo. Gran Turismo 1 was a great game. Gran Turismo 2, other than the garage bug, was an amazeballs game. Like, Gran Turismo 2 was the game that, for me and for a lot of people, put the game on the map. And I think that... Go ahead.
I think that what differentiates video games from almost any other medium is that the sequels almost always are better. And not... Maybe that's too broad of a statement, but
it depends
basically,
on how they're approached.
Basically, in the history of games... You benefit from better technology with a sequel.
Sure,
You tend to. So there, I don't necessarily agree
Max
with
Payne
that.
Or Max Payne 2.
You know what? They sort of blend together in my head.
Okay,
I don't remember
That's
which one
enough.
Was which.
That's fair enough. Remedy says that the wait's going to be worth it. By the way, for Max Payne 3, even though they're
one
only
of my
looking
favorite
on
franchises,
from afar.
I love both of those games. I really do.
Improbable Jay pointed out that the problem in years past was that once a game becomes a success, the automatic response was to make the next game even more badasserer. And that, ironically, that would take the game further away from being badass. Hmm. So
I call that the COD effect.
So Modern Warfare 2, not as awesome as Modern Warfare.
I would say that as the attempt to amp it up past 11 in each iteration, it's become a little bit white noise for me. Now, that's granted that these are great games. They're all great games, and I will play the next Call of Duty, and I will love it, I'm sure. But at a certain point, they become so constantly at 11, and mm-hmm. like we got to make the moments even bigger and grandiosier and all that stuff.
Grandiosier.
Well, I was going to do this badassier thing that he did.
I like it. But we also had a good conversation last week about Squaresoft and what's happened to their ability to create those gaming benchmark moments that we look back on and really identify with as a big important moment in our gaming past for us. And especially about that revolved around Final Fantasy. A number of different threads and comments on that topic. Bryce W. Gilbert said, what Final Fantasy needs is what every good role-playing game needs. Non-linearity, a good battle system, and a good story characterization. Missionary Mar argued the opposite, not the opposite, but argued that linearity gets a bad name, and pointed out that Mass Effect is basically a linear game, and that if you want to create a story, then in the end, the game is going to have to be pretty linear.
Well, it depends on what you consider.
So story. That's what I was going to throw out, is like, obviously, you know, 13 in particular took a tremendous amount of punishment for being a corridor, and it is a corridor for a long way until you get to Grand Pulse. What's our feeling on linearity? Do you agree with Bryce? Do you agree with Missionary, or is it somewhere in between?
Billy, you want to field this one?
Well, when I actually thought of Heavy Rain, because Heavy Rain has so many different branching things that happen, but you know, when they were showing us the game in the beginning, and they were saying, you know, there's so many different options and everything like that. Basically, you kind of had like a straight line, and then it's kind of a rubber band where you could pull it in all these different ways, but you're still going from point A to point B.
Right. And
there's still, you know, you're still going to have Jason doing his thing.
Jason!
but you're still going to have, you know, there's going to be an end result. There'll be different things, but I mean, I think having that sort of the way that game worked out, I really enjoyed it. It mixed it up. But I like, you know, certain games, you know, I don't need 18 different variations of what happens at the end of the game. You know, it works in some games, and some games it doesn't, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, in my favorite game, Dark Souls, you can go the wrong direction for a while if you want. And then there's definitely a story that happens, as you guys heard me explain. No, but what I really want to bring up is Garnet has completely checked out of this conversation, Oblivion, of course, or Skyrim, are the classic example of, you know, just giving you a big playground and letting you create your story. And there are myriad stories to discover. You know,
those certainly came up in the discussion, as did Fallout.
Right. So, and I mean, that's the opposite.
I don't want any dragons in Skyrim.
But they're all there, all of them.
But I want to avoid all of them.
But they're there's all the dragons.
There's no dragons left over for War in the North. It's
none.
Very same.
They have all
sad.
Of them.
Dev Sword pointed out, and I like the way Dev Sword put this, is one thing Japanese role-playing games are known for is having dozens of characters who have different quirks that you have to learn to exploit. The cerebral process...
Quirks such as...
Zippers.
Androgyny.
Zippers.
The cerebral process of figuring out a character and building a party is part of what makes role-playing games role-playing games. It's also how RPGs tend to be one of the best genres for epic stories, as opposed to games like Elder Scrolls, where you choose your own brand of generic Tolkien plagiarism and basically have to read reams of incredibly dry text if you want to figure out some of the context. I sort of agree with him. I think that in a catty way, he puts down like some of the things that do drive me nuts at times about I think Fallout 3 actually had me a little better going than Oblivion did. But like, definitely about Oblivion is that it does sort of become like your own, like, build your own Tolkien toolkit.
Yeah, but that's a genre. I mean, you could say that Mass Effect is a build your own Star Wars, Star Trek game.
I don't think so. I think that Mass Effect, I would say, here's the deal, like 13, you know exactly where the borders of the corridor are, and you have that stupid mini map in the corner, and so you always know that, like, there are the two walls and I can't go, I'm just going down this hallway.
Oh, real quick. Hold that thought. Don't forget what you were going to say, but I completely forgot to mention Rage, it doesn't make any sense. There's no map. You have a mini map that gives you to point A to point B, but there's no map. It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
They're making it up on the fly. You're right. There's no map.
There's no over map. Like, what? Whose decision was that?
It still gives you a dotted line on what you're supposed to follow.
Exactly, but...
Or breadcrumbs?
Yeah.
Interesting.
In the mini map.
Oh, in the mini map.
But there's no way to go... look at the whole world.
For that today.
It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, go ahead. Forgot to mention that.
That is odd. I think that where Mass Effect, because Mass Effect was pointed out as an example, it's still linear, right? But I think what's really the differentiating point is that it disguises the fact that it's linear very well by giving you a feeling of, oh, I have options. I always have things to do. I always have things I can go do, whether they be a side mission or
trying to sleep with everybody on the ship
or try to sleep with everybody. And part of the, and you know where we're 13 and this, I'm not the first person to bring this up, and obviously it's been talked about a ton, is 13 didn't have the towns. It didn't have those places that allowed you to have that experience in the game. And so all you did was run down hallway, run down hallway, run down hallway. And so, of course, it really beat it into your head. What else we got on here? Here's a question for the group of us. This one comes from Groundflyer. He says, what do you think affects gaming more, quality of sales or developer innovation?
Quantity of sales.
Quantity of sales.
Mm-hmm.
So what affects?
What do you think affects gaming more? Quantity of sales or developer innovation? In other words, which one gives more pop? Is it like, Gears of War just sold 5 million copies, or Limbo is the most creative thing you ever played?
I think one leads to another. You know, somebody, one developer is going to do the new cool hotness. You know, co-op. They did it really well, so it sold a shitload. And because people really liked it. And then everybody jumped on that and wanted to sell more games.
Hmm. Yeah.
Jeff's a little torn. He's not so much buying it.
I don't know what he means by affect gaming, because...
Like, what are people going to do in the future? Like if you're a developer and you're looking at what am I going to do with my game, and you're a publisher and you're talking to a developer about here's what I want you to do with your game.
Yeah.
Are you paying more attention to...
You're talking about two totally different sides, though.
I know I am.
The publisher is going to say, I don't give a fuck what you make. Just make sure it sells a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the developers would be like, I want to put fruit trees in my game because I like fruit trees.
Well, one very interesting conversation I had once with a developer who told me that, you know, people come up to him and say, I may have said this on the show before, but forgive me if I have. That people come up to him and say, I have this great idea for a game. And he's like, I don't want to hear your great game idea. I have 1,000 great game ideas. Great game ideas is not what I'm lacking. What I'm lacking is money and time. Those are the things that I don't have enough of. So... It's not, at least in his opinion, it wasn't a dearth of creativity. It was a dearth of being able to execute on all that creativity. So, but by the same token, I think effective game sales or hit game sales can be as damning to creativity as lack of success, because you can be locked into having to create the same thing over and over and over again. You know, I think that's what the Bungie guys ran into, right? And they were, you know what, we're kind of done with Halo, because yes, we keep creating great Halo games, but we don't want to just create great Halo games for the rest of our lives. So, you know, I don't think you can have one without the other. And I hope, and I feel genuinely that the video game space is one of the few media spaces where quality leads to success. You know, oftentimes there'll be really shitty movies that do very, very well, but it's rare that you find really shitty games that do well. It's usually games that are really good that do well. You know what I mean?
I agree with that.
So I think that's encouraging, at least.
You know, like Harmonix innovated in the music genre.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, quantity of sales were there, you know? Then it got stale.
Yeah.
Billy, you've been playing a lot of it, and I know one of the things you wanted to talk about was Global Resistance. Do you think that Global Resistance was born out of a desire to pick up on, you know, the perceived value of, like, Zynga games being so valuable on Facebook and making hay, or the creative idea of, oh, this is a really cool tie-in?
Well,
that's a great context for this question.
Yeah, if you don't know what Global Resistance is, I'm pretty sure it's a Flash-based game, but it's a browser-based game that is kind of, it's a war-based base-building sort of war. But anyways, it ties into Resistance.
Why don't you back up and try and explain Global Resistance another
base,
time?
Base, war, base. It's a base, war, base, base.
Jerks.
Need more base. Drum and bass, 17-year-old war.
No, it's, you know, you have the map of the United. You log in, you know, with your PSN account or your Facebook account, and you have a map of the United States or the changed United States for Resistance, and you choose whether you want to be human or chimera, and then, you know, you you then have a base where you have soldiers and you build bombs and you build different things in your base, and then you bring those things to the field where, you know, you want to take over different areas of the United States, and that's where the war part comes in versus. But anyways, what it ends up doing is you level up, and as you level up, you unlock certain things in Resistance. So I think that's
the cool part.
That's the cool part. You know, it's right now it's mainly multiplayer skins and things like that. I hope they do it a little bit deeper, but you know, I think it's very. What I like about it is the fact that, sure, they could have done it in Facebook. I'm sure they could have done it, you know, in that whole area. But, you know, I think what's cool is it keeps you playing. It keeps you in that world when you're away from your console. And I think that's.
I loved how, for example, the World of Warcraft CCG, certain cards would unlock stuff in actual World of Warcraft. I love that kind of crossover. And it sounds like this is sort of similar.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it's not a really deep experience. It's still a web-based game. I play it just because I can just go to the, you know, website and say, okay, direct my soldiers over here or bomb this area, and then just check in every once in a while. And it's, you know, it's a fun, you know, small, quick thing to do. And then I get also reap rewards out of it, and then I can use, you know, get cool skins and stuff in Resistance multiplayer. So. I would like to see that branched out even more. Like, I would love an app where I could also do that sort of thing. Or, you know, the whole Microsoft promise, as we were talking about before, where you'd be able to, you know, alter your cars. Or, you know, I'm not talking about Velocity Girl and making T-shirts, but, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I'd like to – I would love to be able to do that more.
A shame that we haven't gotten more sophisticated with that? I mean, I'm playing in the 4-string league Madden online franchises, and it's – like, we're using a separate website that's independent of Madden, even called My League Manager, that like interfaces with the EA.
It's kind of the same thing, though.
It's kind of, yeah, and it's cool. It kind of does all that. And then, like you saying that, I'm thinking, wow, it'd be really cool if like I could manage my team and trade offers and free agent acquisition and all that kind of stuff through an app on my phone or iPad when I was not in front of my computer. That would be really cool. But like,
it's also brand aware, because I'm talking about Resistance and I'm talking about a browser based game, and I'm not even talking about, you know, I'll be totally honest with you. I'm playing more of Global Resistance than I'm playing of Resistance 3 multiplayer. And I know that's bizarre.
That's bizarre. That is strange.
Is that because
it's just there?
Well, yeah. I'm checking my email and, I have my bookmark at the top of my browser and I'll click and see how shit's going in the war, and I can do my contribute. And then, I did an unlock. Sweet. Okay, cool. I mean, I've gone back and played Resistance 3 since then, but hey, it's kept me playing. Not only.
That's cool, because it's also kept you playing Resistance 3.
Which is what it's supposed to do. So it keeps you in the world, but I would love to have it mobily on my, you know, iPhone or, you know, something like that. But I'd love to see more games branch out like that. I think that shit's fantastic.
Why has nobody created the Foursquare or GoWalla type app that ties into a game that rewards you for going out into the world and being at a certain place and rewards you in a video?
Dude, I was asking that question like 3 years ago.
I think that would be such a no-brainer. And then you could even have like sponsorship. So, you know, in a video game, if you go to the fucking Gap or someplace... You know, and the Gap pays a little. You go to the Gap, you check in there, it gives you a certain thing here, or, you know, there's a million applications that it could be.
Foursquare kind of already does that, though. Like, if you check in at Foursquare, you can get $20 discount
right,
on
but there's
apps.
No over game. You could have a game where they send you on a fetch quest and you have to actually go out into the world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or I think that'd be a really cool sort of extension. And it doesn't even have to be required, it doesn't have to be integral to the game. It can just be a. Like you're,
all right,
like you're
crazy crossover, man. Now you're just you're thinking way too 2008. Like you're way 2008.
Way 2008.
You're like way 2008.
I'm ahead of my time.
This is only 2003. We cannot have that kind of sophistication yet.
Yeah,
obviously that's 5 years from now.
But if you do like Resistance, check it out. Just it's free. I mean, it's well, you know, it, try it. It's cool. I think it's neat. It's something that I would love to see in the future, in the year 2000. I would like to see this. I want to see more of this kind of stuff. I think it's great.
Oh, goodness. And on that note, let us draw this week's show to a close. We still have Weekend Confirms NFL Tailgate coming up after Finishing Moves, which Jeff may or may not be singing. I'll just leave that up to you. You might want to sing it.
Might I?
Anyway, let's hit them. Okay, so you were expecting to hear music, but in one of those this is recorded as we go on the fly thing. It's Wednesday afternoon, and while we went to break, Del Rio informed us of the news that Steve Jobs had just passed, and we thought we would just take a moment to observe that, because already Jeff was moved.
I am genuinely moved, especially reading Twitter. I just thought it was a unique opportunity. This is literally the moment we discovered it. It evidently happened was announced a few minutes ago. I'm looking at Apple.com has put up Apple.com/Steve Jobs with just his name and the years of his life. And, you know, we talked about the iPhone today. We talked about iOS a bunch. Pretty powerful, you know, effect on all of our lives. And, you know, I created the personal computer. He and Wozniak, I mean, that's a big deal. That's a very Absolutely. Big deal. And it's we all heard him stepping down. We knew it was for health reasons. And it's really evidently he stayed to the very end. He stayed till as long as he could. And that's it's pretty amazing. He's going to have
obviously
quite the legacy.
Someone who history will look back on and
draw one of the
great
titans
great
of the 20th century.
Cultural and economic changes Absolutely. Of the later part of the 20th century.
One of the most important figures of the 20th century, no doubt. Yeah. So yeah.
For many different reasons.
Yeah.
Music, technology, yeah.
Art.
I mean, yeah.
Pixar. I mean,
holy crap.
Like, yeah, kind of astounding. We forget that like he left Apple and was with Pixar for so long and then came back.
Yeah.
And, you know, really brought Apple to be the company that we know it as today. So Steve Jobs will certainly be missed. And now we will do our finishing moves in a little bit more somber mode without the silly music this week. But thank you, Steve, for iOS and all everything you brought to the
I don't want to be overly sentimental. I just think it's, you know, it was a unique moment that we all heard about it right as we were recording this. So I thought, you know, we should acknowledge that. And it's pretty...
We all agreed.
Yep.
We all agreed. Bill, you want to start?
I guess I will start.
You get to start with your
this
finishing
moves.
This
is fucking so awkward, but...
sorry.
No. I do think it's very important, but in the finishing move tradition, I guess if you have not checked out the Ico and Shadow of the Colossus HD package that Sony put out, it is awesome. I highly recommend you going out and getting it. If you've never played it, I had never... It was one of the games in my past that I had never completed, and I finished Ico, and I loved it, and I thought it was great, and I am quarter of the way through Shadow of the Colossus. Also think it's fantastic. Beware, the controls suck ass, and they have not changed, but it in HD, they look fantastic. I think they're really, really good, and it's just really, really cool
frame
game
rate
design.
In the Shadow?
It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we actually reviewed the collection on TRS last week. And the thing I said is two of my least favorite things in video games are escort quests and boss battles. And here are two games built around those exact things that are great games. Proof that they can be, those mechanics can be great.
So mine's a little more off the wall. If you thought Kinect could only teach you how to be a UFC fighter, boy, were you wrong. It can also teach you personal defense. Ubisoft has announced self-defense training camp for Kinect.
And uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. This is a quote from the press release. Because you just can't write this. It will...
They did.
...help players... I couldn't have written it. Help players develop the self-confidence they need to react more efficiently when facing troublesome situations and allow players to discover ways of protecting themselves from various forms of physical assault.
That's some great. Dude on screen like, fuck you.
I don't know.
Fuck you.
I don't know. I'm holding out for the DLC that will let me protect myself when attacked with a piece of fresh fruit.
Yes. Oh, I tried that game, but the Kinect kicked my ass.
What to do when attacked by a man with a banana?
Can you play on easy?
Wow. I'm sorry, this isn't anything like it was when I was attacked in my Kinect. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's... I'm just leaving that one there to lie with Monty Python.
I had the good fortune to be guest on the Gamers with Jobs conference call podcast this week. Love those guys. Big fan for a long time. And... they brought to my attention a board game that I wasn't even aware of that's coming out very soon called Risk Legacy. This is a revamp of Risk, and it challenged all my notions of everything. And I'd love to bring it up. We talked about Dark Souls being a game that challenges your notions of everything, and I'd love to throw this out to the audience and see what people think. what this, if they could play this game, because I don't know if I could. Basically, the idea is that you're going to play Risk a bunch of times with a bunch of people, and every time you play this version, you're going to physically alter the game. So there'll be moments where it asks you to tear in half certain cards and throw them in the garbage, or take a Sharpie to the board and cross something out, or mark it up, so that by the 10th time you've played the game, it is a completely different experience than the first time you played it.
That sounds awesome.
Does it?
That sounds so cool.
I think
cool.
It's incredibly daring and amazing, but like every fiber of my being, I have a difficult time, like the concept of messing with something
it
like
that. It kind of reminds me of that, the thing that they had at GDC this year where the guy brought in, where it was the Game Developers Challenge, where the guy made Minecraft and you're supposed to go in and change something, and then you save it all on a USB stick and then pass it on to somebody.
Oh, that's cool.
So
that's pretty good. That's what I was going to ask the audience. Is there a video game equivalent to that? But that sounds like that might be the answer. That's pretty amazing.
Mm. You should look that up, too.
It's crazy.
It's neat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you are listening to this on Friday, as I hope you are, and you're around the Los Angeles area, you should head over to Culver City over the weekend and check out Indiecade.
Yeah.
Lots of great.
I'll be there. It's fucking rad. Do it. Go.
You'll be there.
Run right now.
Right now.
Right
go,
now.
Go just to Culver please. City. Check out Indiecade. Big thanks to Thunderhead for our drum and bass contribution for the music break. That's kind of awesome. Seriously, when I was 17, I was not producing my own music. So I'm kind of hot for that. It was awesome.
Was there music back then?
Yes, we played the harpsichord.
I love you.
You can check out Jeff, of course, all the time on Totally Rad Show. Just reviewed the TV show that you liked a lot.
I did. Hopefully people watched it, American Horror Story. I think it's the best pilot I've seen all year. And man, is it strange and awesome.
There you go. Totally
check
Rad
that,
Show.
Check that review out.
TotallyRadShow.com is where you can check that out. Thanks so much, of course, to Brooklyn and Del Rio in the booth. And thanks to Billy for being here. He will be here next week. Jeff will be here next week. I will not be here next week. But Zav will be here next week.
Yes.
Conspiracies. Oh, my God. Something's going on
fishy
there.
Never in the same place at the same time.
Something crazy is going on there. All right. If you're not sticking around for the tailgate, that's your weekend confirmed. Hope to see you here in a minute. We are Ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that. I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all. Following those are 3 rings. You know more about me anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. You're the thing I ever wanted. You're the thing I ever needed. But I'm still struggling. Still competing for your love. Your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. All right, thanks for sticking around, and we're going to do a quick tailgate. Last week, the Texans took care of business with the Steelers. Steelers having a lot of trouble up front, and Mendenhall not looking all that good at all. At all. That's definitely a problem. We were obviously those of us drinking the Raiders Kool-Aid.
Yeah, that was you and me. Only us. We should have known.
Yeah, we were. So we don't even go into that. And then there was that Raiders Jets game that was.
You mean Ravens Jets?
I mean, sorry, yes, Ravens Jets. Sorry, I was reading Raiders. Ravens Jets game that was like
one offensive touchdown,
five run back, new league record for run back touchdowns, crazy defense.
Who needs an offense to score points?
Did you watch the game?
No, I just watched the highlights.
I was watching. I mean, I'm not really. I can't. It was weird. It was definitely weird to watch a game like that because it was such an awkward struggle. And I mean, and Flacco, who you have on your
down.
You have on your fantasy team.
Yeah,
like good God,
he was MVP last week, and this week
he was awful. Oh my God, he was bad. Anyway, and in the ESPN league, Jeff and I have both fallen to 1-3. I'm still not panicking. No, it's still not panicking. It's only 4 games.
You're going to tell me when to panic, right?
It's not panic time. Okay. I will tell you when to panic.
Please tell me.
So the good news is that bye weeks have started.
Yeah. So stuff goes crazy.
You're actually okay.
Yeah.
You're actually okay. I mean, look, dude, last week you were let down by Daniel Thomas, Andre Johnson, and JerMichael Finley. Okay. Those are all great names. You had a bad weekend. Now,
Gore
the problem
bounced
is,
back. Gore had 126 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, and the problem you have with Johnson is that he got a procedure done on his knee, and he's going to be out for at least 3 weeks. Yeah. And it's probably longer than that. So you're going to have to find some wide receiver help. And that's a tough one to make up. But Finley will obviously be good for you. And I still think Thomas is the guy in Miami. He's going to continue to get better. I was let down by like the Dolphins. Why am I still even using the Dolphins defense? I got to get rid of them.
Question.
I lost. They were -1 on my team. Ouch. -1. And Steve Johnson let me down. So there's 5 teams at 3-1. There's only 1 at 4-0. Props to Everybody Loves Donuts, who's all alone at the top of these standings with a 4-0 record.
I should have known with his knowledge about donuts.
Yeah, I've got massive holes. I'm gonna have to do some work on the wire or something because I have massive holes for bye week. First bye week's really hitting me hard. This week, though, for our pick'em, we got 3 games for you. The first one I've chosen is Philly -3 on the road at Buffalo.
Now it's funny
they're still being favored.
Got their asses kicked by the Niners last week. Yahoo!
That was a great comeback.
But
that was a great comeback.
Alex Smith actually looked good. But anyway,
that was a comeback.
And
I liked
watching 4-0 Bills. 4-0 Bills getting no respect.
Well,
no respect.
They
haven't played anybody, and Philly has lost 2 people.
No, I said they just. I was going to say they haven't earned it, but it's really unfair to say. I mean, they
beat the Pats.
Yeah, so I can't really say that.
Yeah.
All right. So who are you taking? Philly minus the points or the Buffalo Bills?
Everything in my mind says take Philly, just because I feel like it's a sucker bet, but I'm going to jump on that Bills bandwagon and take the Bills.
Here we go again with the Raiders. I'm jumping on the Bills as well because I think the Eagles pass rush is a little down this week, so that's going to put more pressure on the secondary. They're good secondary, but I still see some potential.
I feel like they're in a
there.
Must-win situation though, which is not good for, and the Bills are like
I'm going
playing
Bills.
With house money, but
Billy Berghammer, where are you going?
Philly.
He's going with the Eagles, and in the booth we have the Bills from Brooklyn. And Philly, well, so we got a nice little split. So you got a nice little split.
Oh, they did. They're not 4-0. Really? Oh, you're
right. No, there are only 2 teams in the NFL that are 4-0.
The Detroit Lions.
That's right.
The Green Bay Packers.
I don't know why I know that.
I don't know either.
You know what?
We're picking the Packers as the last one we're picking here.
I think this might be the first Thanksgiving Detroit Lions game in my lifetime that
Holy
matters.
Holy shit, that's right.
In my lifetime.
That. Usually it's a...
Are they playing the Niners?
No,
just
Detroit.
That they're good.
Oh.
Packers.
Oh. Second game I want us to pick is a big, big, big rivalry. It's the Chargers going into New Mile High as a 4-point favorite over the Denver Broncos. I will jump right out there right off the bat, and I will say this is a rivalry game. This is a game that they will get up for. That I will take the Broncos +4 at home on that all the way.
I'm taking the Chargers. I think their offense is
it's gonna... okay. Rivers is. I'm still Rivers hasn't.
He hasn't really made the, broken out, but
hadn't made me the fantasy points I need from him. Yeah. Basically. Billy, who are you going with?
Denver's. We played them last week. The Packers played them last week.
The game was a little closer than the scoreboard.
I thought you played very well.
I worked my ass off, dude. Shit's hard.
So are you taking Denver. The Broncos? So it's 2 for Broncos. And in the booth, we have Broncos for Brooklyn and Chargers for Del Rio. And wrapping it up, of course, for our guest of honor, Mr. Billy Berghammer, it's the Packers -6 on the road. In Atlanta.
Well, as you know, in my history, I'm never allowed to say who I think might win a game. But what I will say is if the Green Bay Packers are 5-0 after next Sunday night, I would be pleased. That is keeping with my karma. I'm sorry to be anal like that.
Aaron Rodgers is a man possessed. He's on fire.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's so sexy. He's dead sexy.
Those pants. It's the pants.
Unbelievable. Wow.
The fuck?
I say that in order to tell you that I'm taking the pack, and I think they're going to be fine covering the spread. No problem.
I don't know. Got a little running back trouble there in Green Bay. I'm going with the Falcons.
Who needs a running game, dude? They don't need one.
Really? Running game? We have 2 running backs. Just because one down, the other guy just ran just fine.
It's a nice platoon system. I don't know. I'm looking for a reason. Like 6 points for the home team, and it's the Falcons. I'm looking for them to bounce back and get on track. They got 2 great receivers. They still have a good, they still have a respectable run game. I'm looking for the Falcons to nut it up, break this thing, make undefeated season not even an issue for the rest of the year. I'm going with the Falcons.
All right.
Who are you guys going with? Green Bay for Brooklyn and the Packers for, okay, so fine. All you Packers
alone.
All you Packers fans, that's fine. I don't know. Falcons are a nice team. I don't know. There you go. They're at home. 6 points at home. Come on.
Yeah, basically 9.
Yeah, they'd almost blow it. All right. So there you go, folks. Thanks very much for joining us. Until next week when I won't be here, but you will get Jeff and Zav and Billy. And we have a special guest, I think, lined up. That's it. Weekend Confirmed. And we will be back in... I'll be back in 2 weeks. Weekend Confirmed has been brought to you by Random House Audio. Visit www.randomhouseaudio.com to download something new.